past relations, any devas and brahmas who are in your favor, may they all join us, listen to the Dhamma and find the path to enlightenment.
Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata sadhammam munirajasa sunantu sagmokkadam Dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta.
And finally, before we commence, let us take a moment to accept the truth and the reality that although today we have behaved like we do thanks to the Dhamma, in our journey in samsara we have not always had the opportunity to associate with moral people and noble people. We have oftentimes had the only been in the association of immoral people and ignoble people. And in having done so, they filled our minds with raga, dvesha, moha. And having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, avidya and tanha, we will have not been able to recognize with the noble Aryas, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Pachyeka Buddhas, the Arahata Buddhas, Anagamis, Sakrudagamis and Sotapannas, be they on the path or the fruit. Either knowingly or unknowingly, if we had insulted them, if we may have abused them or slandered them, those Aryupavadas today hamper our progress to Nibbana. So let us all take a moment to seek their forgiveness. May those Aryas find the compassion in their hearts, which they all most certainly do, to forgive us for all the Aryupavadas we may have done in the past. And finally, let us all make a firm resolute. May this dispensation of the Dhamma help us all attain the noble achievement of Sotapanna. And if there are any of you who may have entered that path of stream entry, may you be able to fulfill that journey by attaining the noble attainments of Sakrudagami, Anagami and Arahat through the course of this sermon itself. With that firm determination in your hearts and in your minds, please be prepared now to listen to this sermon. Okay. Another Sunday, another week, another month, another year. Another few hours. What of? Where from? This is all from extremely limited time that we all have. I've told you before, and I'm sure you'll know this, your clocks are ticking, our clocks are ticking every second. The time that passes us, we have no way of pulling back. Words that have been said you can't pull them back. It may be that you regret some of the things you might have said. Things that you've done, there's no way you can undo them. There may be some things that you regret in your lives that you've done. Some thoughts that you might have had, you can't go back, you can't rewind them. And there may be some thoughts that you regret. You can't go back in time and change the past. So really, regretting is not something that we like to do very much of in Buddhist practice. Because there's hardly any use in doing that. What we really ought to do is learn from our mistakes. And there's no harm in doing that. We must all learn from our mistakes. When did we all start doing mistakes? Have you all kept track of how many mistakes you've done by now? Do you have a logbook for all the mistakes you do? When was the last entry? In fact, when was the first entry? After you thought you could keep log of it, you started keeping track, but before long you gave up. There's no way I can keep track of all the things that I really shouldn't have done, I really shouldn't have said, and I really shouldn't have thought. We've all come a very long time in journey in samsara. This is not the first time we've been born human, but hopefully this is the last time, if you're fortunate enough. When I say fortunate enough, I don't really say luck has anything to do with your progress. It's really if you take the time to practice, if you take the time to fulfill your journey, then it'll happen. That's all there is. There's a series of things you have to do, you have to complete. It's like, say you go to school and you have your math teacher who says, by the end of this lesson you should complete 50 sums, and he gives you this exercise. Or he says, before you come back tomorrow, you're only going to be allowed to my lesson tomorrow if you will have completed all 50 sums. So you just have to complete them. How much time you take is really up to you, because as soon as you complete them, then you're allowed in the class. If you don't complete them, well, sorry. They're the rules. So Nibbana is very much the same. And if you remember from last week, I said, you know what, let's put Nibbana to a side. Let's not worry about Nibbana. I propose, let's not worry about becoming arahants. Let's all put that to a side. You know, these are complicated things. Let's keep it really simple. And let's go searching for the truth. That's what we did last week, didn't we? We went looking for the truth. And we kept score, if you remember. For all the times that you thought desire brings you happiness. Every time you went acquiring what you desired, did that bring you happiness, or did that really bring you endless torture and pain and suffering? And so we kept score of that. If I remember right, we came with the scores that were at the end of the game were 7-0. 6-1? 6-1, okay. Thank you. So, what we need to do really is not regret about the things we've done in the past. Because I think it will be quite natural for you to start reflecting on your past. And you will be doing this by now already, I know that. You know, when you listen to the Dhamma, when you learn the Dhamma, when you understand the Dhamma, it's natural for you to go back into your lives. The past few weeks, the past few months, the past few years, and think, good heavens, why did I do that? Now who's going to suffer the consequences of that? Didn't I tell you about the young Anagarika who's with us, who's 15 years of age? You know, I was telling him about the story of Kalani Maharahatanwansi, the great elder Kalani, whose last few moments were in a boiling pot of oil, and that's how he was killed. And that was the consequence for having put a fly, just a house fly, into a cup of hot milk. So that was his consequence. And then having listened to that, this Anagarika child who lives with us at the monastery said, "Swami Mohansa, when I was a young child, one day I saw my mother cooking and she was preparing to fry some papadums. There was a hot pan of oil and I took a pet fish from our fish tank and into it just to see what might happen. And so he asked me, what might happen to me now? And I said, well, you know the answer." So it would be quite natural for you to start looking back at your lives and maybe regret. But what I would suggest to you is there is not really much point in regretting, because no matter how much you regret, you really can't change the past. What you can do is change the future. Who and what you are going to be in the future depends on who and what you are at this moment in time. The things we've done, the things that we regret, when we get to listen to them and understand the Dhamma, and we understand that those were mistakes, was because we understand that those things were done with ignorance, avidya. And like we said, like we always make a resolution at the start, you know, in having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, avidya and tanha, we might have insulted the Aryas. We might have done all sorts of bad things. So it's always ignorance that is the culprit. It's ignorance that throws us down the wrong path. It's ignorance that gets us into trouble. But what we need to understand is it's not somebody else's ignorance. It's my own ignorance. And something I often ask you all to do is, please don't point your finger at someone else when you get angry, when someone shouts at you. When you're driving up the street and someone pulls up in front of you and you didn't expect that, if that makes you go mad, if you start swearing at them, well, please take a moment, stop and think where the fault is. Because otherwise it's pointless me going on. Me, you know, the journey that we all make, all the effort that you put in to prepare these sermons, to make these venues available, all of that is pointless. It's a waste of time if when you actually go into your labs and start living your lives, you can't see for yourself how much your lives have changed. Our monks sometimes, when they go out for sermons, you know, things happen. And I'm sure, you know, some of you will probably be aware. Some people can't, you know, this is the nature of the world. You know, last week one of these kids asked about Mara. And we said there are two kinds of Mara. There's Vasavati Mara, Vasavati Devaputra, and then there is the Raga Dvesha Moha. This Vasavati Mara, he's the king of the Kama world. The sensual world, he reigns over it. So it's in his interest to protect the Kama world. You see, let's just take a really simple example. Think about the Grama Niradhari in your village, the Grama Sevaka, okay? If all of you left, abandoned your village and went to live elsewhere, then where is he or she, the leader of? If you all left, abandoned Sri Lanka and went to live in another country, then what power does the president of this country have any longer? So it's not in anyone's interest, if they're the leader, if they're who reigns over a certain geography, just to take a really simple example, it's not in their interest if everyone all of a sudden starts leaving. What they want to do is have as many people there as possible. So when Mara reigns over the Kama world, well, what do you think he wants you and I to do? Leave the Kama world or stay here? He wants us to stay. And because he wants us to stay, he'll come and influence us. He'll influence us to behave and act with raga, dvesha, moha. He knows that in our hearts and minds we have delusion, And for as long as we have delusion, we can be fooled. Have we not all been fooled? You know, last week was a really good example of that. You know, we thought it was desire that brings us happiness. Well, we did the mat. We lifted the bonnet. We opened the doors. We looked under the cowls. Actually, does desire bring us happiness, or really is desire the root to suffering? Is that, that's the experiment we did last week. Indeed. So when you understand that, you can no longer be fooled. And that is what Sammaditti is. This thing that we call right view today, in simple terms. Sammaditti. Right view. When someone has the right view, when someone's view is rectified, and it's no longer, you know, when you no longer can be fooled, then there's little that Mara can do to trick you. You know, let's just take a really simple example. Why do you go and study? So you can learn about the world. You like to get a good education so you can understand the world. What people do to, you know, how people build this world up. And it's a generally accepted norm that the more educated you are, the less that people can fool you. And why is that? That's because you know a thing or two. When someone comes and talks to you about money, if you studied money, if you studied economics, then less chances that people can fool you. If you studied architecture and you have to build a home and you have workers who come and start working and you know a thing or two about that, then there's less of a chance that they can fool you. If you studied trade, if you studied law, and when someone comes and starts arguing with you or debating with you, if you've studied that, if you've got knowledge about that, then there's less of a chance that they can fool you. And this is why you want to go and become educated. And that's great. But the thing is, if we don't become right-viewed, if we don't get an education about the reality of this world, then we can be fooled by Mara. And the reality of this world is what we try to uncover every week when we come together like this. It's the reality that people don't like to talk to you about. Sometimes because they're fooled themselves. Remember I gave you this example of when someone goes and plays Kanamutti at the Sinhala Aluttavurudutsa. You know, someone's been, when you play at the games, they give you a baton, then they say, right, it's time for you to go and crack the pot. Well, if you're blind, then how can you guide someone else? When you've got a blindfold around your eyes, how can you show someone else the path? So it's only when you know right from wrong can you guide someone else in the right path. So what we try and do is try and be right viewed, Sammaditti, to come to Sammaditti. Do you remember what sang is? We discussed this in the past. What is sang? Sangmaditti is, there's meaning behind the word. It's not just right view. You know, like I said, these words do have English translations, but from time to time we need to dig deeper. We can't just take what we see at the superficial layer. That's what we've always been doing. Just taking things at the superficial layer and look where it got us. We've got to look underneath. We've got to look under the covers. Well, just looking at the superficial layer, look where it got the Titanic. Right? So we've got to look underneath. We've only seen the tip of the iceberg. What about the rest of it? So we really have to look underneath, because that's what's going to cause the most damage. So what is Sammaditti then? Sang is this coming together of avidya tanha. It's a combination, it's the coming together of anything. I'll give you a few examples. Sangeeta. When notes come together to form music, that's Sangeeta. Sangbandha. To our foreign listeners, I apologize for using Sinhala terms, but I need to get across this meaning of what sangha is. It's not just any old, you know, there's meaning behind these things. Words didn't just come into being just, you know, out of thin air. There's reason for this. There's reason for all these things. There's a reason why you've all been named what you've been named. If your name is Dharmapala, then there's a reason why you're called Dharmapala. If your name is Kumara, there's a reason why you're called Kumara. If your name is Manel, there's a reason why you're called Manel. It's not just any old name that came from anywhere. There's a reason behind that. All things are reasoned. All things are conditioned. That's what the Buddha said, right? Nothing comes out of thin air. So what is this sangha? Sangha bandha, sangha sarga, sangha gita, sangsara. Think about it. Why do we call sansara sansara? Well, you know, this thing called sangha has meaning. It's always the coming together. Generally, in terms of Nibbana, it's the coming together of avidya and tanha, ignorance and attachment. When you take the process of the uniting or the amalgamation of avidya tanha to be fruitful, to be full of essence, to be meaningful, then you've come to the conclusion that this sangha is sara. What is sara? Sara, asara. You'll have heard of these two words, right? They're Sinhala words, and in fact they're Pali words as well. Sara, asara. So sara is having meaning, having essence. So when someone is under the view that sang is sara, then they're not interested in doing what we call sang ma. Remember when you're at the temple and you offer a dana, or when you've done something meritorious, at the end of that you recite this stanza, this gatha. Idam me punyang, ma me bala samagamo, satan samagamo hotu, yava nibbana patya. Until I have attained nibbana, ma me bala samagamo. What does that mean? Ma me bala samagamo. May I be with my uncle? Is that who mama is? No, we're not talking about your mama. We're not talking about your uncle. Ma me bala samagamo. May I be distanced? May I be able to refrain from? May I be able to abstain from the association of bad people? Bala samagami. Immoral people, may I be able to abstain from them, to keep my distance from them. May I not have to associate with them. That's what you wish for. Idam me punyam, by the power of the merits that I have acquired today, may I be able to dissociate from these immoral people, from immoral associates, until the moment that I have attained Nibbana. So that's what ma is. So what do you think sangma is then? Sangma ditti. Ditti is your view, is how you look at the world, it's your perspective. So what sangma ditti then means is coming to the view that avidya trishna is what has been causing me this problem all along. So this is why when you talk about the Noble Eightfold Path, where does it start at? Sammaditti. The Noble Eightfold Path doesn't start from Samma Samadhi. It doesn't start with meditation. It doesn't start with Samma Kammanta, right effort. It doesn't start with Samma Ajiva, right livelihood. It starts with Sammaditti. It's when your view has been rectified. It's when your view of this world is corrected. That's when you know right from wrong. Because until you take right as being wrong and you take wrong as being right. Remember I gave that equation the other day for avidya, if you were here. X times minus 1 equals Y. Do you remember? And we said What's avidya here? Minus one. The nature of avidya is minus one if you put it into a math equation. Because no matter what you put into x, you're going to get, if you put in a positive number, you're going to get a negative number. If you put in a negative number, you're going to get a positive number. If you take positive numbers as being what is true in this world, because a negative number, you can't say here's minus three apples. Can you give someone minus three apples? No. You can give someone three apples, but not minus three apples. So what is positive, what is positive is what's true in this world. You can give someone three apples. But what is minus or negative, these negative numbers are all conceptual. So they're not things that really exist in this world. They're just constructs that we have come up with for, you know, easy living, for us to be able to transact with each other. So therefore, if you want to understand avidya in an equation through math, you know, for the math geniuses in the room, x times minus 1 equals y, where minus 1 is avidya. So if you put a positive number into x, what do you get? A negative number. If you put a negative number into x, what do you get? A positive number. So if you put the truth into x times minus 1 equals y, you get false. If you put false into it, you get you get what looks to be the truth. Apparent truth. But is it really the truth? It's not really the truth. So that is the nature of avidya. So for as long as we have this condition called avidya within us, we're not able to see right from wrong. And therefore we make the wrong choices. And therefore we say the wrong things, we do the wrong things, and we think the wrong things. The things that today perhaps you may regret, but I'm trying to say, let's not worry about them. Whether you go to the heavens or the hells, or whether you attain Nibbana, is not a result of what you've necessarily done in the past. You can change that now. I guarantee that unless anyone in this room has either killed their mother, has either killed their father, killed an arahant, or if you've been a monk in the past, or if you're a monk today and you've committed the offense of schism, which is Sangabhede, you can all attain Sotapanna. And no matter what sins you've done in the past, you can change where you're going to go from this point forward. If you become a Sotapanna, all those karmas that you've done, which are destined to take you to the apayas, they become ahosi karma. Their impact is lost. They can no longer influence what happens in the future. So it's avidya that we need to deal with. It's this ignorance that we need to deal with, that we need to eradicate. No one else is our enemy. Vasavati Maraputra is not our enemy. The fire is not my enemy. If I'm holding something that is flammable, then the fire is not my enemy. It's the fact that I'm holding on to something that's flammable. Just throw the thing away. Then you can't be set on fire. If you are doused in kerosene oil, then clearly you should stay away from the fire. What Mara can do is bring you things that can influence someone who has the condition of avidya. For as long as you have ignorance within you, what Mara can do is bring to you things that can defile your mind. He can show you things, can make you see things. He can play tricks. But he can only play tricks for as long as you can be tricked. You know, think about, if you ever seen magic, a magician perform, you can only be entertained by magic if you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, right? If you know how a magic trick is performed, can you any longer be entertained by that magic? No, because you know exactly what's going on. When he puts a coin in his mouth and appears to pull that coin out of his sleeve, you know that's just magic. That really didn't travel through your mouth and come out of your sleeve. Sorry, I'm assuming you all know that magic is just a pretense. I don't want to ruin it for you guys. You know, it's like the first time you hear Santa Claus was was a lie after all. You know, you don't want to ruin it for them. But, okay. So if you know that magic is just a pretense, then you can't be fooled. And likewise, when you know right from wrong, when you know clearly that this world, that you, the reason that you see something true to be false is because of ignorance, then the errors of your ways are with you, not outside. So what you need to do now is remove avidya. I thought today we'll talk a little bit about the process of dependent origination, paricchasamuppada. And I want to try and keep it really simple, because we have our young listeners here. You know, oftentimes when I deliver sermons and I see parents who come along with their kids, I remind the parents to take a moment to be grateful that their children are willing, that their kids are willing to come with them. Without saying, "Mother, I really can't be bothered, you go do what you like," or "Mother, that's not what I had planned for Sunday afternoon, let's all go out for a meal." You know, kids can really wreak havoc if they wanted to. You know that. I know that because you tell me so. I personally don't have the experience, but my wife was a teacher. She taught grade 1s and 2s in the UK. So every afternoon when we got back home, I had nothing to say to her. I just listened to all the things that the students at school would do. And good heavens, I thought I was mischievous when I was young. Times have changed. But anyway, the point I was going to say was, you know, parents, you have to be grateful that your children are willing to come along and listen to these sermons. So it's because I have a deep sense of gratitude and respect for them as well. I want to try and keep this really simple. Okay, let's keep it as simple as possible. Paticchasamuppada, or dependent origination, is something that the Lord Buddha put forward, and he said, if you want to, you'll know this, right? If you want to see the Buddha, if you want to know the Buddha, what must you know? What must you be able to see? The Dhamma, indeed. I'll take a short diversion and I'll come back here. Just remind me in case I forget. I have a tendency to do that. Recently I had a few calls from a few people, and there were others who came and met with me, and they said, you know, there are a lot of people internationally who listen to these sermons, some of them who are non-Buddhists, and they have lots of questions about, you know, who the Buddha was, what powers did he possess, what supernatural powers did he have. You know, we talk about the Yama Mahapilahara, right, emitting fire and water from both ears at the same time, from his body at the same time. We talk about how the Prince Siddhartha was able to walk on lotuses as soon as he was born. You know, and so people are really curious. Now I know that these questions are eventually going to lead to, well, how do we know that they really happened? How can you prove that to me? You know, I wasn't there. You know, you're just asking me to believe something that you read in a book. How do I know that was real? And this is why I don't talk a lot about these things, as you probably know. When I deliver sermons in Sinhala, I have full privilege of making references to how the Lord Buddha performed these miracles. Because then I'm delivering sermons to people who generally have a Buddhist background. You know, they've grown up with their mothers, fathers, their grandparents, you know, having taught them about who the Buddha was. And even if they don't understand the Dhamma, at least they have some faith in the Buddha. At least when they see the statue of the Buddha, you know, your hands come together and you go sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. But that's not necessarily the case when we deliver sermons in English, because our audience is not just you guys here. There's a large audience of people, and today there was a lady who spoke with me and she said she has quite a lot of friends in Canada who she gives these sermons out to. And they're non-Buddhists. So there wouldn't really be a lot of help in me sitting down here and talking to you about supernatural powers of the Buddha. Because how can you accept that? Let me share with you something from my own past. I've told you in the past my dad was a scientist. Well, he still is. And he always encouraged me to only believe what you could see with your own eyes and hear with your own ears. If you can sense it, then accept it. Don't accept things otherwise. What's real for you, what's material, that you can accept. So I was a very materialistic person. Materialism was my philosophy. Yeah, you know, with my own mouth, the mouth that I preach today, the Lord Buddha's Dhamma, I regret to say, I have in the past asked my parents the question, asked other friends the question, you know, how do I know that Prince Siddhartha was not a lunatic? How do I know he wasn't just a crazy man? And today I'm wearing the robe that he gifted me. Today I'm living the life that he gifted me. But look how much of a change it's made to me. And that's not because I went to classes and studied about the supernatural powers that the Buddha performed. Because that's all I learned when I was a young child. You know, when I was at school, when I went to Dhammapasa, the first things that they would teach me was how Prince Siddhartha was born, and he walked on lotuses, and you know, then how the devas came down to the earth and accepted this child. Right? And so it was all these miracles that I was asked to believe, which to me sounded like blind faith, which was entirely and categorically against what my dad taught me to do. So I was not prepared to do that. And so I would question, I mean, in fact, you know, when I was about the age of 7, 8, the school I went to, they taught me Christianity. So I used to, as a young child, I used to sing hymns. I used to sing about God, Jesus Christ. And I thought, wow, you know, that's my savior. Seeing a monk today, you'll probably think that's the last thing you'd hear from me, right? So what changed my perspective on the world? What changed how I looked at myself and the world is not learning about the supernatural powers of the Buddha. Like I asked you before, to see the Buddha, what must you see? His Dhamma. When I began to see his Dhamma, then there was no one that could come and shake my faith in him. When I understood this Dhamma is completely logical, I was a very logical person. I would question everything. I've said to you before, question everything. Don't take anything for granted. Question not for the sake of questioning though. Not for the sake of a debate. That's pointless because you're wasting your time and I'm not prepared to waste my time. But if you want to question in the hope of wanting to understand because you can't understand, then please question. Otherwise, you know, just questioning for the sake of it, you're just wasting your time. But question everything. And that's what I did. And so when I came across the Buddha's Dhamma, one thing I learned about the Buddha's Dhamma was, when you see the Buddha's Dhamma, you get to see the Buddha. So we are all happy with that. Then the Buddha said, to see the Dhamma, you must see something else. And what is that? Paricchasamuppada. It is dependent origination. The Dhamma is everything that is true in the world, in this universe, in the cosmos. Everything that is true is the Dhamma. It's not what the Buddha came and gave us. So please don't take it in that sense. You know, we call it the Buddha Dhamma, and we call it the Buddha Dhamma because the Buddha revealed it to us. I've said this to you in the past, he didn't invent the Dhamma. He only discovered it. He was a Columbus who discovered America. America existed ever since the world was born. But Columbus discovered it. Likewise, the Buddha didn't invent the Dhamma. He discovered the Dhamma. He discovered what was true, what was real in this universe. And this is why from time to time when the truth is hidden, when the truth can no longer be found, then a Buddha has to come back into this world, realize the Dhamma for himself, and then teach it again. We venerate him, we respect the Buddha, because it's thanks to his infinite, boundless wisdom, he's able to uncover something that is hidden from everyone else. But he is not the inventor. He is who uncovers the Dhamma and reveals the Dhamma to us. So the Dhamma is nothing but what is true, what is real, everywhere. Is it true that I have a winnowing fan in my hand? Is it true? Yes. So that's the Dhamma. It's just the truth. It's the truth about everything. But where science stops at what's true is what we can observe, Buddhism goes beyond that. Just because what we can observe, you know, just because we can only observe a very limited spectrum of what really exists. I mean, think about when people didn't know the first thing about infrared or ultrasound, cosmic radiation, you know, these things. People didn't know the first thing about them. You know, they looked up into the skies, they saw the moon, and they thought, wow, that's probably some kind of god there. They looked at the stars and they thought, they're all angels. They come at night and then they go away in the morning. And then science went ahead and they did experiments and they invented telescopes and then they found out stuff. But for science, what's true is what can be observed. Whereas what Buddhism gives us, what the Buddha gives us, is everything that is true. It's like the universal set of everything that is true. Science is a subset of that. Here's all we know. And every day that keeps changing. What's true today isn't necessarily what's true tomorrow in science, right? When the atom was discovered and people said, hey, we found the smallest undivisible particle, didn't take very long before people came out and said, well, guess what? There are protons, neutrons and electrons. And they said, they're the undivisible particles. And then before long, again, they came back and said, actually, you know what? There are quarks. And then again, they came back and said, well, guess what? There's now this thing called the Higgs boson. Well, before long, they're going to be packets of energy. I don't know if they've already come across that by now. Probably have. Yeah, there you go. One day, they're going to come and say, all there is apotejo vayo patvi varna gandhara soja. The octet, the pure octet. It's a matter of time. But we haven't got the luxury of time, that's the problem. We can't be kicking about just waiting for science to come and give us the truth about this world. So thanks to the Buddha, we have the opportunity to discover that from him and then take what we need from that and apply that into our lives. So he said, if you see dependent origination, then you get to see the Dhamma. Now, when the Buddha, so if the fact that there's a winnowing fan in my hand is the Dhamma, then quite literally everything that there is the Dhamma. So what he says is, it's dependent origination that teaches us how these things come into being. Whether it's your cat at home, your pet rabbit, the tree outside, this temple, this winnowing fan, this microphone. No matter what, if there are sankata, what's a sankata now? Again, sang, remember? We talked about what sang is. It's the coming together. Kata or kruta is an activity. It's something that you have to do. So when you do the act of bringing something together, what comes out is a sankata. The result of that is a sankata, something that has been conditioned. When the conditions come together, the result of that is a sankata. So what the Buddha says is, all sankatas, all conditioned things, are the result of the dependent origination process. So if you reverse engineer the dependent origination process, you can work out how these things come into being. Like I say, whether it's a jackfruit, whether it's an apple, whether it's a cat, your pet cat, or whether you have several hairs that are now grey and the rest of it are still black. All of that can be explained through dependent origination. But again, we don't have the time for that. We don't have the time to stop and study the universe. Clearly, people do that. I mean, what do you think NASA does? They study the universe. What do you think microbiologists do? They study the universe. What do you think physicists do? They study the universe. But we don't have the time for that. Because what we're here trying to find out is, why are we still suffering? Isn't that not the biggest problem that we have? Recently in a sermon that we delivered just a few days ago, it was the second year anniversary of someone's parents passing away. So I went to the home and sat down, to their home and sat down, you know, prepared for the sermon. And there was a photo of this, of the parents that had passed away. And the children, they gave me a piece of paper on which were written the names of the parents. And then I said, you know, there will probably be some of you here who have come here to fulfill a duty, a responsibility. You have a duty towards your neighbors, towards your relatives. When someone passes away, you know, you can't go on holiday. You have to cancel your holiday and you have to go along to their almsgiving or to the sermon that is going to be delivered. Whether it's a bana or a dana, you have to attend that, right? And sometimes you don't always go because you like to, but you have to go there so you can tick the box. You can put your name in the register. I was there. You know, these things are duties that you have to fulfill. You know, as people that live in society, you have duties and responsibilities. There's no problem about that. But what I said was, at the sermon, I said, if some of you are here to fulfill a responsibility, a duty, then I want you to think again. You know, these people who passed away were human beings just like you and I. They had the opportunity to listen to this sermon, but alas, now they can't. I don't recall preaching to them when they were alive, because 2 years ago, I was not prepared to preach. You know, they passed away 2 years ago, so this, you know, I wasn't in robes back then. We didn't have Dharmayabai back then. So back then, being alive back then didn't really do much, wasn't really of much use to that person. The question is, well, you are all alive now. You can all hear what I'm saying. You can listen to this sermon. You can understand what I'm saying. You're intelligent people. But for how long? For how long are your senses going to work? For how long are you going to be able to sit where you are sat right now and listen to this sermon? How long before you say, son, why don't you go? Today I can't. My back's hurting. Because it's time now. Your clock's coming to an end. Or one fine day you go deaf. People wake up deaf. Hasn't that happened? Of course. So that opportunity you still have, ladies and gentlemen. You still have the opportunity to listen to this Dhamma and absorb the Dhamma and change your lives, because you've done all sorts of things in the past. Now, because we've done all sorts of things in the past, and because we are born today, because we are alive today, there are these four kinds of suffering. Jati, jara, vyadi, marana. Birth, decay, disease, and death. The way I see it, these are tsunamis. There are four tsunamis that are coming your way, that are coming all our way. We're stuck in the middle. Who here has escaped the suffering of death? Anyone? Who here has escaped the suffering of disease? Can we all come to a consensus and say from here on we are not going to fall sick? Is that possible? No, it's not possible. Who here has aged for the last time? I'm not going to age from hereafter. I've got my good looks right now, and this is how good I'm going to be looking for the rest of my life. I'm going to die looking this great. No, none of us can say that. And none of us know where we're going to be born after this. So these four tsunamis, jati, jara, vyadi, marana, are coming our way. If we all go to, if we visit, you know, somewhere like Gaul or Hambantotak, you know, where these areas that were badly affected by the tsunamis, And I'm sure you'll have visited those places, right? When the calamity struck, I'm sure some of you will have visited there just to see what life was like back then for those people. When you went there and you spoke to someone, if we go back there and speak to some, you know, just normal everyday folk and say, hey, excuse me, do you have problems in your life? What do you think he's going to say? Yes or no? Of course. I'll ask him, what sort of problems do you have in your life? He'll say, well, I've got money problems, I've got family problems, I've got school problems, I've got work problems, I've got, I don't know what to eat for tonight. I don't know what's going to be there for dinner. I need to go and fetch something for dinner, right? He'll have all these problems. My kid's not doing really well not doing great at school, so I need to go and sort him out. Right? Next door neighbor's trying to encroach on my land, so I need to go and sort him out. I've got 6 lawsuits that I need to sort out. Right? He's got all these problems. My parents are unwell, so I need to take them to hospital and make sure they're okay. So he's got all these problems. And then I tap him on the back and say, excuse me, there's a tsunami coming. Literally, there's a tsunami coming. And I point at him, there is a tsunami coming. And I ask him, which one of these is now your biggest problem? Is it what you're going to have for dinner tonight? Is it the fact that you haven't put your children to school yet? Is it the fact that your daughter hasn't been given her hand, you know, she hasn't been married over yet, off to someone yet? Is it the fact that you haven't got your mortgage sorted out yet? Which one is your biggest problem? It's the tsunami. Well, aren't we all really stuck in the middle of 4 tsunamis coming our way? Jati, jara, vyadi, marana. Death, disease, old age, decay, and birth. Isn't birth that's what's responsible for all the suffering that we have to suffer today? You know, recently I asked you the question, how many pills do you take just to keep your life going today? You'll know the answer. How many times did you go to the doctor last 6 months? You'll know the answer. I told you about my father, who came to see me a few months ago, after he worshipped at my feet and I could see he was struggling to stand up on his own 2 feet. And I could see tears in his eyes. And a few moments later, and that's when I realized, I remembered, he's got arthritis. And he tells me how, when he has to go to the doctor, when his pains are really bad, he goes to the doctor and then they give him injections. And they give these injections to the joints, which are excruciating, he says. Sometimes he screams in pain. You know, he's a grown man, age 65, screaming in pain. Like a little child. Have we all escaped from that yet? So what do you think our biggest problem is then? Is it not these 4 tsunamis coming our way? I'll ask you another question. Think about all the people that you love in your life. Your son, your daughter, your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife. Have any of them escaped these 4 tsunamis? So if you have 4 other people who live with you at home and you're the 5th person, now each of you have 4 tsunamis coming your way. There are 5 of you. 5 times 4? 20. You've got 20 tsunamis heading your way. Each one looking to tear you up, to completely destroy you. Aren't you going to die? Aren't you all going to die? So have you escaped the tsunami of death? Aren't your children going to die? Aren't your parents going to die? Isn't your husband going to die? Isn't your wife going to die? Have they escaped the tsunami of death? Aren't you going to age? Aren't your parents going to age? Aren't your children going to age and decay? So have you escaped that? No. So is what I'm saying just a figment of my imagination? Or is that really what the truth is for us all? None of us have escaped that. So we're stuck in the middle. There are 20 tsunamis heading our way. How many sons do you have, madam? 2. That's 8 tsunamis. Including you, that's 12. One tsunami was that bad. How much damage do you think 12 tsunamis are going to do? Thank you for volunteering the answer. Now each of you ask yourself that question. The question I asked my mother was, Mother, you know that this tsunami is heading your way. Are you prepared for it now? So this is what I'm saying. The point I'm trying to get across to you is, we haven't got the time. We haven't got the time to go and study about the universe because there's a greater problem at home. The biggest problem that we need to deal with is right in front of us. We are stuck in the middle of 4 tsunamis, each and every one of us. Like I said, we go to Hambantota, we go to Gol and ask that gentleman, what is now your biggest problem? And he's going to say the tsunami. So clearly, the biggest problem for all of us should be the same, right? Whilst dependent origination teaches us how everything comes into being, I would like to say that is not my problem. Because I haven't got the time to go and figure out how the universe came into being. I haven't got the time to go and figure out how Astra Centauri came into being. I haven't got the time to go and figure out how Andromeda formed. Or how black stars formed, black holes formed. That's not my problem. I've got 4 tsunamis coming my way. That is my biggest problem. The Buddha was the greatest doctor that was ever born. And this doctor taught us how to cure ourselves. He gave us this medication, this medicine called dependent origination, the Dhamma, to cure this problem. Unfortunately, what most people do today is put that to a side and they go and study everything else. It's good to study the Dhamma, I agree with you. There's no problem with that. But what you need to ask yourselves is, have you sorted yourself out yet? Have you solved the biggest problem that you have? Once you've done that, go and figure out everything. Go and find out how the world came into being and when it's going to end. Go and study time-space continuum. Do whatever you need to do after you've sorted out the biggest problem that you have at hand. If I pointed right now to you, here's a tsunami coming your way, you're not going to be in this hall for 1 minute. For a moment longer, you're all going to be running like there's no tomorrow. You're going to forget about each other. His mother is going to carry her children and want to try and save them. Parents are going to carry their children and start running. Husbands are going to hold on to their wives and start running. Isn't that true? Yes. Well, how do we know when this tsunami is going to come and hit you? So the problem that I want to deal with, I want to tackle with, and I want you all to think about, is this problem of death, disease, decay, and birth. Let's figure that out through dependent origination. Everything else we can worry about later. When I become an arahant one day, that day I'll come here and I'll talk to you about how the world came into being, how the universe came into being, how gods come into being, this, that, and the other, and I'll explain it all that to you through dependent origination. But right now, I've got a bigger problem at hand. I'm trying to run because there's a tsunami coming my way. You're asking me, you're asking me how to slice an apple into 12 pieces. That's not my problem. Sorry. So, let's look at dependent origination to figure out where is it we got it wrong. Avidya paccaya tanha, avidya paccaya sankara. Sankara paccaya vinyana, vinyana paccaya namarupa, namarupa paccaya salayatana, salayatana paccaya passa, passa paccaya vedana, vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati. Now that's probably something like Greek. I can tell because he's got a phone in his hand now. See, this is why I try and refrain from throwing this out. But people are now starting to ask, you know, let's talk about more profound Dhamma. Let's go deep. No, you asked for it. But I'll try and keep it as simple as possible. Avidya is ignorance. Ignorance is not being able to see right from wrong. Ignorance is taking what is true as being false and what's false as being true. Now all these weeks we've been talking about, you know, what is true is that one thing that is true for all of us is we're all looking for happiness in our lives. That is universal. From the tiniest insect, the ants who are running about trying to find some food, carrying their eggs so that they can protect it from the rain, right? Protect them from the rain. So from the tiniest insect, to the most intricate being that was ever born, human beings, we're all trying to find happiness in our lives. That's universally true. But what's also universally true is we're all subject to death, old age, disease, and birth, and rebirth. So let's look at Paticchasamuppada and how that causes us the plight that we're in today. The reason that we go to old age, the reason that we decay, the reason that we have to die is because we are born in the first place. Ever heard of John that died but was never born? No, because if you're not born, you're not going to die. No one's going to fall sick if you're not born. No one's going to age if you're not born in the first place. This is why the Lord Buddha says that is the problem that we need to figure out. Birth, jati. So how does jati come into being? How does being born come into being? And you know, when we talk about jati, we can go really deep. You know, the Buddha doesn't only talk about beings being born, but you know, this jati can be used to explain how each chitta is born as well. How every thought is born, and that decays and dies, and how the next thought is born, decays and dies, how the next thought is born, decays and dies. All of that can be explained through Paticchasamuppada. There are 16 cycles of Paticchasamuppada in each thought. I'm not going to talk to you about that today. Because you'll all start going into Chaturtha Dhyana Samapatti. Deep states of meditation. And when you go into that state of meditation, some of you start making noises. Apparently they call it snoring. I don't know. And then I have to come and wake you up. So I'm not going to talk to you about that, but this is why I want to try and keep it really simple. So we understand that being born is the problem here, right? If we stop birth, then decay, disease, old age, all of that stops. If you aren't born, you don't die. If you're not born, you don't decay, you don't disease, you know, you're not subject to disease. Right? So it's birth that's the problem here. So what is it that causes birth then? Bhava. Bhava paccaya jati. What is bhava? Bhava is the becoming. It's the becoming of something that ultimately results in the birth of something. I'll give a few examples just to help you try and make sense of this. You know, because at first, this is going to be a little bit difficult to understand. But don't worry. You know, we can talk about this over the next few weeks to help you, to help this sink over time. You know, it's like when a fetus is born within the mother's womb, a baby isn't born immediately. It takes time. The baby is in becoming. It develops inside the mother's womb. This fetus develops. And over time, when it comes out of the mother's womb, we now call it a baby. Or when just before it's ready and it's fully formed, you know, after the lapse of what, 9 weeks, oh, sorry, 9 months, 9.5 months, 10 months, we are now prepared to say a baby is in the mother's womb. But before it's a baby, it's a fetus. So while it's a fetus, it's still in the process of becoming. You want to bake a cake. You make the mixture and you put it in the oven. Is it a cake just yet? No. It's flour. It's, what else? Eggs. What else? Sugar. Right? Water. It's all these things you put in there. But it's in the process of becoming. What? A cake. So it's the process of becoming that the Buddha puts forward as bhava. Now, I'll give you something else you can relate to. Let's say you want to become a rich person. You want to become a rich man, a rich woman. When you want to become a rich person, who do you associate? Poor people or rich people? Rich people. If you want to become a rich person, is there much point in associating poor people? No. Remember Rich Dad, Poor Dad? Haven't read that book? Okay, don't worry. That's all worldly stuff I've done in the past. I thought that would bring me happiness. So when you want to become a rich person, you associate with rich people. When you want to become good people, you associate with good people. Why do you come along and listen to these sermons? Again, you will associate with people who you want to become like. Right? So, when you associate someone like that, you are now in the process of becoming. If you are a bad person, I mean, let's not go into the definition of what a bad person is or a good person is, right? Just take it at a superficial level, that's fine. Just to understand this example. If you are a bad person, or let's say, you know, you've been imprisoned. Before they let you out, chances are they'll probably put you into a rehabilitation facility, where they'll get you to associate with people who will come and talk to you. They'll come and do some counseling. They'll help you to rebuild your life. They'll help you to understand society, how to live in society, right? So what they're doing is they're giving you the opportunity to associate with something else, and in the process of or something or someone else, and in the process of doing that, you become more like them. So you're in the process of becoming a good person. So that is that process of becoming what bhava is. Do you get that so far? You can ask me if you have any questions, then please ask before we continue. So it's the process of becoming. Okay? So for the kids in the house, I'll give another example. Let's say you're not very good at, say, math. What you then do is you take some tuition lessons. So what you're doing there is you go to a tuition master who's really good at math, and now in the process of associating with your teacher, in the process of doing your homework, in the process of working out those sums, you're in the process of becoming good at math. What a university does is it helps you become someone who's a graduate. Okay, so it's that process of becoming that is bhava. Now, so therefore, for us all to have been born humans, we have all had to be in the process of becoming human, first of all. Now, I'm not talking about the time you spent in the mother's womb here. I'm talking about what made you human in the first place. By the time you came into the mother's womb, you were already human. You were already human before you came into the mother's womb, in the state that we call a Gandhabha. A Gandhabha is born before you come into the mother's womb. When a man and a woman unites, at that point in time, these human Gandhabhas, they're all over the place. They're looking for an opportunity to come into this world with the body that you and I have today. And they're just waiting for that union to happen. And when that happens, a Gandhabha comes in, takes seed, or takes hold of that fetus. And then from there on it starts developing. Now again, one will ask me, how can you prove this? So, what I'll propose to you then is, what I said about the Gandharva, leave to a side. Because I can only teach you what I've learned from the Tripitaka, the Theravada Tripitaka. I can tell you I haven't seen this with my own eyes. I haven't seen this. What I know is what I've learned from the Tripitaka. What I know from having associated with the elders, the masters who preach the Dhamma. But this makes sense to me, and therefore I accept it today. But if there are skeptics among you, and that's perfectly fine, remember I was the biggest skeptic in the house back then, okay? If there are skeptics among you, and that's perfectly fine, leave aside this Gandharva process for the time being. But you know, before you become something, you have to be in the process of becoming. Like I gave a few examples. Before you become a doctor, you have to be in the process of becoming a doctor. Before you become a good person or even a bad person, right? Your child is really good at home, and then all of a sudden he gets to associate with bad people. This is why parents want to take care of their children. And then the more your children associate with bad people, then they're in the process of becoming bad people. So for anything to be born, you have to be in the process of becoming before that, right? So that's what bhava is. So then the question is, what is responsible for bhava? Where does bhava come from? Upadana paccaya bhava. What is upadana? Tanha is attachment. Upadana is close association. Close association. I don't mean physically close association. It may be the case in some cases, but I'm talking about close association with the qualities that are responsible for the becoming of something. So, let's put it this way. If you were a deva in your previous life, a god in the devas in your previous life, to have become a human being in this birth, you would have had to be in the process of becoming human before you passed away as a deva. To be in the process of becoming a human being, you would have had to associate what it is that makes a human, the qualities that give rise to a human, the guna, the gati guna. That's a singular term I threw out there, but you'll know what that means. Gati guna. It's the qualities that make something. Qualities makes a man, right? So likewise, it's the qualities that you associate that then puts you into this process of becoming, which ultimately results in that thing coming alive. Now, I know, as I say, you're probably thinking about physical people dying and being born, and that is one side of Paticchasamuppada. But, even in your own lifetime, you're going through several series and process of Paticchasamuppada every second. If you're a rich person today, if you're a rich man today, you weren't always a rich man. If you're an educated man today, if you're an educated woman today, you weren't always an educated lady. If you're a doctor today, you weren't born a doctor. You weren't born a teacher. What you did to become that was associate the qualities, the knowledge that was required to make a teacher. This is why you went to teaching school. This is why you went to medical school. This is why you went to university. This is why let's say you're an alcoholic. I'm not talking about you, by the way. I'm just taking an example. Let's say there's an alcoholic and he wants to give up the habit of alcoholism. So he goes into rehabilitation, perhaps some counseling. Now, what he does there is he gets to associate what's required, the qualities that are required, the knowledge that's required for him to break the habit. Likewise, someone who is not an alcoholic, someone who hasn't taken alcohol ever in their life, what happens if you put him into a circle of people who are alcoholics? Before long, he's going to become an alcoholic. This is why when we talk about drugs and alcohol and sex and these things, all the time, oftentimes I tell you, take care of your children, protect your children, because you don't know who they get to associate when they leave home. Your home is the only place where they're safe. Well, you've got a TV at home though, unfortunately. And you've also got the internet. They're bad enough. It's not the TV that's bad, it's not the internet that's bad. What's bad is what they show on TV, what your children get to see on the internet. We'll come back to that later. So it's what you associate. Upadana is association. Upadana. Upa is close. Close association. So how do you know Upa is close? Who is Upanayaka? Deputy? He's a deputy leader. Right? Upamati. Deputy minister. So deputy is someone who is closest to the one that's next in line. So this is why close association is the meaning that we can confer to upadana. Whatever that is closely being associated. Okay? So, for as long as you associate closely the qualities and the knowledge and the attributes that are required for one to instill within themselves to become a human, a deva, a brahma. Sorry, so I was saying, you know, if you were a deva in the previous life, you would have had to associate the qualities that put you into the process of becoming a human. And then you became a human, and then you were born a human being. So it's association that matters. You know, what do you think we do when we come to listen to these sermons? Again, you're associating. You're associating the attributes, the qualities that are required for you to attain Nibbana. You know, you want to become Sotapannas. You want to become Sakrudagamis. You want to become Anagamis. You want to become Arhats. To do that, you have to associate the qualities. You have to associate the Dhamma. So this is Dhamma Upadana. Buddha Dhamma Upadana. When you go and live in the world, that's Loka Dhamma Upadana. Close association with worldly Dhamma. And here you are closely associating with supramundane Dhammas. The Dhammas that help you travel towards Nibbana. So that's what Upadana is. Now, what causes Upadana? Tanha paccaya Upadana. So tanha is attachment. Tanha is where you go and attach yourself to something. Havino. Again, a singular term I threw there. Havino is to attach yourself to something. When you go and attach yourself to something, that's tanha. And that tanha can be towards something good or bad. For you to want to attain Nibbana, guess what you need to be attached to? Nibbana. So not all types of tanha is bad. You need tanha to attain Nibbana. The tanha that's going to get you into trouble is the tanha that is the dasakusal, the 10 unwholesome deeds. Raga, dvesha, moha. For as long as you are attached to raga, dvesha, moha, that's going to take you in samsara. And if it's lobha, dosa, moha that you are attached to, that's going to take you to the hells. If you are attached to the qualities, the attributes that are required for you to become a human being, then guess what you're going to be born? A human. If you are attached to, and if you are attached to the qualities that are required to become a deva, then guess what you're going to be born? A deva. You see, haven't you met humans who are like gods in flesh? You know, you say, I'll throw a single expression here. Ara manusya nan devi ek wage. You know, that man's like a god. Or sometimes you say, arunam bal ek wage. You know, it's like a dog. Look at how he behaves. He's like an animal. Why do you say that? It's because you see that the qualities or the attributes that he's demonstrating are the qualities of a deva. The qualities of a deva is to give. To give whatever you have. Denna denna devi. That's why, like I said, you know, every word has meaning behind it. The devas are not called devas just for the sake of it. When you practice giving, whatever you have, give as much as you can. Practice giving like this, like giving's going out of fashion. As much you can give, that much you're eradicating attachment. Practice as much giving as you can, whether it's alms, whether it's giving to poor people, right? Whether it's giving the Dhamma, the gift of Dhamma. I mean, the gift of Dhamma excels all gifts. Thanks to you, I'm able to give that gift every week. But so can you. You know, when you perhaps share the link to these sermons out with somebody else, some of your friends. I know there are some of you who've started to transcribe these sermons. Make them available in print format. Because there are people who don't have the opportunity, the luxury to listen to these sermons. Or their preferred method of taking the Dhamma is by reading. There are people among you who do that. What a meritorious deed that is. With every word you type, with every key that you press on the keyboard, that's a gift of giving. The Dhamma. When the rewards come, you know, they come tenfold, hundredfold. Because you're given the gift of Dhamma. Today we brought along a few books that we published recently. And these were all made available thanks to efforts of people just like you. So we'll share that out at the end of this sermon. It's called Deeds and Results, Karma Vipaka. And there, I've taken the effort to detail the 10 unwholesome deeds and the 10 wholesome deeds. Potentially it will be the first of a series of books to come out in the future. But this is where I wanted to start because, you know, this is what determines whether you can save yourself or whether you go and jump into a pit. Because once you've committed some unwholesome deeds, there's no saving you after that. So it's really important for you, for people to understand the 10 unwholesome deeds and the 10 wholesome deeds. So you can at least keep yourself safe until we can come and talk to you about Nibbana. So at the end of the sermon, we'll hand them out to you. There's no cost. It's all free, by the way. How much can you price Dhamma at? What's the price of Dhamma? It's priceless. How much did the Buddha charge for each sermon that he delivered? If the Buddha had charged for his sermons, good heavens, we'd all be bankrupt. You can't price the Dhamma. It's priceless. You know, this is the Dhamma that saves you from the hells. How much price can you give to that? You know, if someone comes and says to you, I guarantee and I can prove to you that if you take what I have to offer to you, you will never be born in the four hells again. You will never be born an animal again. You will never be born a preta again. You will never be born in the eight great hells again. How much are you willing to pay? Is there a limit? You can take my car but not my house? You can take my watch but not my house? No. We're talking about saving you from the hells where we've spent an eternity in. Uncountable years in. Eon after eon we've spent there. This is why you can't price the Dhamma. This is why you can't price the service that venerable monks and nuns, as well as the upasakas and upasikas like yourselves, render to this world. Because when you understand the Dhamma and you go and share that with your friends, like that lady who spoke to me and said, I try and deliver these sermons in whatever way I can to my friends who are Christians, who are Muslims, who are Hindus, doesn't matter, who are Buddhists sometimes, who think they know what Buddhism is. I thought I knew what Buddhism was. You know, here's the path to liberate ourselves. Here's the path to liberate ourselves from the four tsunamis. Is there a price for that? It's priceless. So never are we going to put a price on anything that we do. We'll come and give you CDs. We'll never ask you to pay a price for that. We'll do it for as long as we can do it. You know, there are people just like you who regularly contribute whatever they can. Some struggle to make a living, make ends meet at home. But still, they put aside some money towards the dispensation of the Dhamma. This is not for my upkeep, by the way. You know, I've talked about how I'm happy to live my life under a tree or on a rock, going out for alms. This is the monk life that I wanted when I ordained. I like to go out with my alms bowl, accept whatever it is that's offered to me. That's what my preference is. Not living in a monastery and waiting for people to bring food to me. You know, so if any of you have visited us at the monastery, you will know the state the monastery is in. We started building work about 8 or 9 months ago, and still, you know, our monks, there are 40 of us, and we use 2 toilets. They're not really toilets, they're just squatting pants. And there's a tap that's attached to some PVC. That's all we have. And sometimes, you know, philanthropists, benefactors, they come and visit us and they say, "Oh, Venerable Sir, please allow us to build some halls of residence for you. Please allow us to make some new toilets for you." And we say, "Well, hang on, there's a Dhamma hall that's still not being built. Don't worry about us. Go and build the Dhamma hall, where we can deliver these sermons, where we can accommodate as many people as we can." That is our priority. Giving this Dhamma, saving you from the 4 hells. Saving you from the 4 tsunamis. While we try and do that for ourselves. That is my priority. Some of you may know, when we first moved into the monastery, back in September, you know the kind of life I lived. Some of you will know, because I've shared some stories from my past. You know, back in when I was in the UK, I lived in the lap of luxury. But and so did all the other monks. They've all come from well-to-do places. When we first moved into the monastery, my bed was a sheet of wood on 4 bricks. And that's how we were for several months. The windows weren't covered, so whenever it rained, everything was wet inside. So we used to cover ourselves with several robes just to keep ourselves dry. But we wanted to come to the monastery as soon as possible so we can start helping people as soon as possible and not wait until everything was complete. So even today, if you visit us at the monastery, you know, and please do, if you have the opportunity, you will be able to see for yourselves what state we are in. But this is not me crying and saying, "Oh, please come and look after us." I've got more than I can ever want. I've got more than I ever need. I came to sit under a tree on a rock and practice my path. When the most venerable Sariputta says, "A hut for me is a hut that protects me from the rain. For as long as when I'm sat in the meditation posture, if my knees don't get wet from the rain, that's all the area I need, and that's all I need to call my to have as a hut. Nothing more." Well, I have 10 times, 20 times, 100 times that. There's one large hall in which all 40 of us monks live in. That's more than I could ever ask for. That's more than enough for me to complete my journey and fulfill my path. I have everything I need. But that's all again thanks to you. Now, I didn't build that, you did. I don't go out for alms today because you come and feed me. I didn't buy this robe. You donated this robe to me. You offered it to me. So you've done everything you can. You've done everything you need to do for me. This is why I'm trying to do everything I can for you, to save you from the 4 hells and to save you from the great tsunamis that are heading your way. So like I said, the reason we come and listen to these sermons is because we want to, we've attached ourselves to Nibbana. This is what Chanda is. Chanda Chitta Virya Vimansa. Satara Yudhipada. The Lord Buddha says these are qualities that you absolutely must have if you want to attain Nibbana. So attachment to the 10 unwholesome deeds, to Raga, Dvesha, Moha, that's clearly bad, no question about that. But if your attachment is now to the 10 wholesome deeds, there's certainly no problem with that. Ma bhikkave punyanam bahitta sukam setam ativatanam punyanti. Monks, do not fear the meritorious deeds. Some people fall into this distorted view. If we do good deeds, then that's going to take us in samsara. So let's not go off our arms. Please don't fall into that trap. The Lord Buddha says, you know, do as much good as you possibly can. For as long as your legs can lift you up, you know, go and help somebody else. If it's a glass of water that you can offer, do that. When you listen to this Dhamma, go and, you know, if it's just a friend, say you're on a bus somewhere. You're on a bus and the person sat to you is next to you is a friend. Some or the other, you know, you see something happen in the middle of the street. And to you, you know, you begin to see the Dhamma. There, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a narrow escape. Or perhaps, you know, someone gets into an accident. And your friend says, oh, poor thing. And you go, well, what about you and I? Have we escaped that? Aren't we still subject to that? And he says, actually, you know what? Good point. Now you've opened yourself an opportunity to start to talk to him about the Dhamma. Have you ever never thought about how you might be able to escape this suffering? You know, there are monks all over the country who speak about the way to liberate ourselves from this suffering. Would you like to learn more? I can give you a CD. You know, why don't you all have a CD with you wherever you go? You know, in your handbags. You know, if you have a mobile device, then just, you know, have one of these sermons. You know, you can Bluetooth it across to that person, your friend. Or if you go and visit a friend, you know, and you're playing on his computer. You know, just copy a file across. Leave it on his desktop. You never know. He'll double click on it, start listening to the sermon, and he thinks, good heavens. I never knew attaining Nibbana was that easy. I thought it was beyond any stretch of my imagination. You know, be tactful, but in a positive way. If they say, no, I'm not interested, then please don't go pushing it on them. Please don't go do that. The Buddha says, trying to give someone the Dhamma if they're not interested in it is like a man running after a woman who says, I no longer want to live a married life with you. And going after her and pleading to her, oh, please, 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 please come and live with me. Please, I won't hurt you again. Oh, please, please, I beg you. That's shameful. That's disgraceful. So the Buddha says, don't do that. But if anyone of your friends, your family, you know, when you go visiting them, have a CD with you. Just say, you know what, I've been going to these sermons recently, and you know, to an intelligent person like you, I'm sure this will have something for you to take. People like to listen, to hear you say they're intelligent. You know, someone as clever as you, I'm sure there'll be something here for you. How much? Oh, it's free. If you like to it, keep it. If you don't like to it, please don't throw it away, just give it back. And if they say, I didn't have the time, well, you know, just listen to one. I listen, really, not my cup of tea. Ah, it's perfectly fine, I'll have it back, thank you. Give it to somebody else. So we do all this, ladies and gentlemen, because we have an attachment to Nibbana. So attachment to whatever is what then takes us to Upadana. Tanha paccaya upadana. For you to have become a doctor, you were in the process of becoming a doctor, which was the bhava. To get into bhava, you had to closely associate other people who talked to you about becoming a doctor. They said, you know, oh, that's a really good thing to do. You know, someone like you must become a doctor. Isn't that what parents say? All Asian parents? At one point, weren't all of us doctors in our parents' minds? Yeah, so was I. I'm a doctor today as well, but in a different kind of doctor. Aren't I a doctor? See, I fulfilled my parents' wishes. Not quite sure that's exactly what they had in mind, but it's close enough. So, you need to first be attached to that. You need to be attached to whatever it is that you want to become. Whether it's a rich person, you need to be attached to the fact, to that entity of becoming a rich person. You want to become a rich person. You want to become a dancer. You want to become a doctor, whatever the case might be. So that is attachment. So So if you're humans today and you want to become a deva, first you need to be attached to becoming a deva. That tanha needs to be there. And when you have that tanha, that attachment, then you will start associating what it is that makes you a deva. You'll go looking for it. You'll ask people, hey, how does one become a deva? How does one become a sotapanna? Didn't you ask that question? Of course you did. How does one attain nibbana? Didn't you ask that question? Well, before you ask that question, didn't you want to attain nibbana first? Do you ever go asking how does one become something if you don't want to do that? No. If you have no interest in it, then you don't go finding out. So first you need to have a want for it, and that comes from attachment. So, tanha paccaya upadana. So what's the cause for, where does tanha come from? What's the cause for tanha? This is all dependent origination. So when the conditions are there, you get the result, right? So where does attachment come from? Vedana. So vedana is feeling. Vedana paccaya tanha. So this feeling, generally the things that we are attached to are the things that bring us good feeling. There are three kinds of feeling. There's bad or suffering, you could say, good feeling, bad feeling, and equanimous feeling, upeksha vedana. There's also upeksha, tara upeksha. So an arahatun vahan says upeksha is not the upeksha that we study through avidya paccaya sankar. How do we know? Well, it's avidya paccaya sankar. Where does an arahant have avidya? You see, for as long as there's avidya, for as long as there's ignorance, would you agree with me that there's suffering somewhere in the picture? Because where does it all lead to? Jati paccaya, jara marana shoka parideva dukkha domana supayasa eva metasa kevalasa dukkha khandasa samudeva hoti. For as long as there's ignorance, the ultimate end result is going to be suffering. It might look like it's happiness and joy at the surface, but underneath it's an iceberg. So this upeksha vedana, really, there's a sense of suffering behind it. I'll give you an example. You're at home. You hear the bell ringing. Now, when you hear the bell ring, what do? You walk up to the door and you open the door and you greet the person, or, well, sometimes it's not someone you want to have indoors, and then you don't necessarily greet the person. But the time between you hearing that noise to you wanting to know, you finding out who it is that's outside the door, there's a sense of, I want to know. There's a sense of, you know, you don't know whether it's a good person or a bad person, whether it's someone that's going to make you happy or someone that's going to make you unhappy. So now you're kind of in the middle. But that is a sense of anticipation. It's a sense of, hey, what's going on? Who's this? I want to know. Remember, wherever we had tanha, if you rewind back to last week and remember, you know, the things that you were attached to, between the point of attachment to the point of where you were able to acquire it, that feeling of, when am I going to be able to get it? When am I going to be able to know it? Remember we talked about how your friends bring you presents wrapped in wrapping paper, right? And it's left on the table. When they first walked in, you were pleased to see them, but now you want them to leave as soon as possible so you can go and unwrap them, because you want to know what it is that has been wrapped up, right? You want to know what's in there. Now, if it's something that makes you happy, if it's something that you like, then that's going to make you happy. I mean, I'm talking about the gift. But if it's a gift, you know, say you're a young guy of the, I don't know, age 10, 12, whatever. You get a toy car, makes you really happy. You get a doll. Do you like dolls? Like dolls? So if it's a doll, then that's not necessarily going to make him very happy. But what about the time between him wanting to know what it is and actually finding out what it is? There's a duration there. Now I have an attachment to wanting to know what it is, but I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, whether it's going to make me happy or unhappy. That feeling, is that a positive feeling or a negative feeling? It's a negative feeling. That's why Tathagata Nuhanse says, you've got to be able to see Sapa as a dukkha. You've got to be able to see pleasure or Sapa as a dukkha, as suffering. You've got to be able to see dukkha as torture. I mean, we've got no trouble with that. Someone comes and slaps you in the face. You don't need to take time out from work and sit down and analyze, is that really pain or did I really enjoy it to some extent? You don't need a PhD for that. That's obvious. And then he says, you've got to be able to see upeksha as anicca. And later on in the Patisamvida Magga Prakarne, which is another book in the Tripitaka, Venerable Moggaliputta Tissa Maharatan Vansi, the great elder, he says, Peelanattena Anicca. You've got to see Anicca as something that torments you, that agitates you. Pelinava? We've talked about this word in the past. Peelanattena Anicca. Something that is Anicca is something that makes you suffer, that torments you mentally or physically. So, the Buddha then, in another place, he says, Upekshava anichalesa dakinna. So therefore, we can't take upeksha as really being something that's equanimous. This is the thing, because you know, where did it all start? With avidya. So if it starts with avidya, it has to lead us to suffering. So, in that example I gave, someone's knocking on the door, you hear the ring, you hear the doorbell, you walk to your door, that duration of time, you know, after you open the door and you see someone, it's your brother, your beloved brother, that makes you really happy. Or then, oh, you see your ex, you know, not, doesn't make you very happy. But the duration between the two incidents, you hearing it and then you walking up to the door and opening the door, you know, that time you want to know, there's a sense of, what's going on? Unhappiness, uneasiness. That's pelina. That's anicca. That's upeksha. Either way, it's vedana that gives rise to attachment. Vedana paccaya tanha. And so generally when there's sukha vedana, sapa vedana, good feeling, you're attached to that. And you want more of it. You know, you didn't become, if you are a doctor today, you didn't become a doctor because you really didn't like becoming a doctor. If you are a musician today, you didn't become a musician because you really didn't like becoming a musician. Becoming a musician, or the point of becoming, or the thought of becoming a musician was something that brought you good feeling. The thought of becoming a doctor brought you good feeling. So for someone to go and become something, you have to have good feeling about it. This is why we're all humans today. Because we took becoming a human as something that's great, that gives us good feeling. Although today you might not necessarily agree with that. Today you get to see right from wrong. Today you see what was wrong with your ways, and today, you know, you're having to suffer the consequences. But back then, because you were filled with ignorance, you and I as well, we were filled with ignorance. We couldn't see right from wrong. And therefore, becoming human, oh, lovely, how lovely that is. Let's all go become humans. Let's all go become devas. Let's all go become brahmas. You know, when you say, manusya balu eda karannepa. So we're talking about a human who is behaving like a dog. Why is he behaving like a dog? He's behaving like a dog because he's attached to the things, you know, that an animal, you know, he's behaving like an animal. He's not treating his fellow citizens well, you know, he's being cruel to other people. Right? So he's doing that because he's attached to the unwholesome deeds. And he's attached to the unwholesome deeds because it's the unwholesome deeds that bring him good feeling. So whatever the case might be, it's good feeling that leads you to attachment. So vedana paccaya tanha. So what brings you vedana? Passa paccaya vedana. This is contact. Now this contact isn't necessarily that. It's not one surface touching another surface. That's not the contact we're talking about here. The contact that we're talking about here is the contact that happens in your mind. When you listen to me speak, your ears pick up sound. Your ears pick up sound, and then there is sota vijnana, the consciousness that's associated with sound. I know this is probably getting a bit boring for our young listeners here. You asked for it. You know, as I was explaining to the lady who rang me, I have young children who come here who are aged, you know, sometimes 6, 7, 8, 9, all the way up to listeners who I know, you know, either here or, you know, online, who listen, you know, 50s, 60s. And I have to cater to all ages, the full spectrum. Because what happens if I deliver 2 weeks worth of sermons this way? They're not going to come after that. Then that's going to be such a shame. Because I know for a fact that most parents here, you can understand sermons delivered in Sinhala. But you come here because you want your children to be able to understand this, the Dhamma. Because, you know, they go to international schools, some of them, and Sinhala is not the language that's either spoken at home or their main language of communication. And so sometimes, you know, it's English that they're most familiar with. So this is why I say I want to try and keep these sermons, at least for now, you know, let's keep it simple. Let's talk about what everyone can relate to. It's not easy to understand Paticchasamuppada. I tell you, even when I'm trying to distill it down to, you know, this level, you know, there was once the Lord Buddha gave a dispensation. He was preaching Paticchasamuppada to a series of monks who were sat there. At the end of that sermon, Venerable Ananda comes and says, Swami Nuhansa, Swamini Bhagita Nuhansa, you know, that sermon, I got all of it. I think Paticchasamuppada is so easy. I think we can all understand that. And then the Lord Buddha says, he admonishes him. He says, Ananda, do not ever say that again. What you said is wrong. You're mistaken. You're deeply mistaken. The Paticchasamuppada is like the great ocean. What's the nature of the great ocean? The further you walk into it, the deeper it gets. You don't need to go to the middle of the ocean to bathe, do you? When you go to the beach, if you want to swim in the beach, do you go to the middle of the ocean to do that? No. You just go where it's safe. And sometimes, you know, parents say, son, puta, don't go there. You know, stay close to us. That's enough. You don't go one step further. Paticchasamuppada is like that. The further you go, the deeper it gets. And sometimes you could be drowned in this. What happens then is, you know, sometimes, you know, these sermons, you know, there are people who listen for the first time. You know, say there could be a friend of yours who lives abroad and you share the link. And then the first sermon they're listening to is about Paticchasamuppada. And I'm talking about avidya, paccaya, sankara, and they're going like, what? I'm never going to understand that. He's not going to listen to another sermon ever again. What a loss, what a shame. So this is why we want to try and keep it simple, you know, for the benefit of especially our young children here. Now, I do care a lot about them. I genuinely do. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't take the effort to come all this way, not necessarily for the parents out here. I mean, there is partly for you parents, but mostly it is for these young children here. Recently there was a teacher who came to meet me from a popular school. And she came and spoke with me and she said, you know, the students that are in our school, they are beginning to behave in ways that we never thought might happen. I warned you, drugs and sex everywhere, it's creeping into our school system in broad daylight. And she spoke with me for some time, and she asked us, you know, if we could perhaps come and help them. It's happening in every school. I asked you parents, do you think you know what your kids are doing when they leave home? Do you know everything they get up to at school? Really? Think again. Your kids are scared. They won't come and tell you everything that happens at school. They're scared. Because all they know is mother hits me, father hits me. Or shouts at me. And sometimes they have been threatened by their friends at school. If you say this to your mother, this is what's going to happen to you. If anybody finds out from you, then this is what's going to happen to you. Sex and drugs everywhere now, creeping into the school system. Recently, we tried to organize a sermon in a school around Kandy, and there was a teacher who got in contact with us, and she said, you know, can you please talk about drugs, because you know it was a girls' school. Apparently, they caught girls doing drugs in the school's toilets. Girls' schools. When I was at school, I thought, you know, I never thought, you know, that those kind of things would happen in girls' schools. It's rife now. It's all over the place. No one's safe. This Dhamma is the only insurance plan that's going to help you. I ask you every week, what's the most prized possession that you have? Is it your house? Is it your car? Is it your Rolex watch? Or is it your child? Well, you've taken out an insurance plan for every other thing. Have you taken out an insurance plan for your child yet? I'm not talking about life insurance, you know that. The insurance of Dhamma is the only, it's only insurance plan that can save them. If they don't understand that there's something out there that's here to save us, if they don't see that, then they're going to fall into this karma world, the world of the Mara. Like I said, you know, Mara wants to reign. This is his world. And to reign over this world, then you've got to have citizens. He doesn't want people leaving. He wants people to stay here. Each and every one of us, and particularly your kids. So he's trying to infiltrate their minds, defile their minds. So watch out, parents. Be careful. So this is why, you know, as I said, I do care deeply about your children. I didn't have children of my own, but I think that's because my destiny was to be a father to many hundreds of children, your children. And that's why I come here and try and deliver these sermons to you and also other children in other countries. Because I know there are lots of parents who struggle to give what they understand to their children. You know, you parents are fortunate enough to have been born in a background where you had Buddhism. You know, your parents were Buddhists, your grandparents were Buddhists, most of you. And so they always talked to you about the Buddha, they always talked to you about the Dhamma, they talked to you about the Sangha. And they instilled in you faith in the Triple Gem. They talked to you about the 10 unwholesome deeds. They said, do not do that or I'm going to slap you. You know, back then it was okay for parents to hit children. Now parents get in trouble for hitting their children. I know that's the case back in the UK, but I think it's now probably in Sri Lanka as well. I think now kids pick up the phone and start dialing child services. Somebody gonna get hurt. Somebody's gonna get hurt. So this is why we will try and keep coming back to basics. I think over time, you know, they're gonna grow up. Absolutely. When they have a good foundation, when they have a good grounding in the Dhamma, when, you know, they can talk, you know, and besides parents, you know, when you're at home, ask your kids, what did you take from today's sermon? What did you learn from today's sermon? You absolutely must ask them these questions. You know, what do your school teachers, when you have student teacher or teacher parent meetings, what do they say? They encourage you to go and do work at home with your child, right? So, well, what do you think you've got to do in this case? You've absolutely got to go and do that. I can only do 20%. You've got to do the other 80%. So you've got to guide your children at home. Don't just let them go, because you didn't bring them into this world to just let them go. Let them go and destroy themselves. They're your most prized possession. So treat them like that then. They deserve a good upbringing. They deserve to know the truth. They deserve to find right from wrong. They deserve to find the path to happiness, because you promised them happiness when you brought them into this world. Did you not? When you held your children in your arms the first time, your baby in your arms for the first time, did you not say, I'm going to make you the happiest child in this world? Did you not promise them that? Well then, give them the happiness that you promised them. I can only give you 20%. You've got to do the other 80. So let's come back to Paricchasamuppada. What you're doing right now with your children is actually, when you bring them here, you're giving them that close association. The upadana with bhikkhu bhikshuni is upasaka upasikas. This is who the sangha is. Sangha includes bhikshu bhikshuni, upasaka upasika. All four of that is sangha. Bhikshu bhikshuni, upasaka upasika, sangun hobavai. Tathagata Mahansa says that. It's not me saying that. So, the close association that we are giving them is because you, at least as parents, have an attachment to them, and you have an attachment to them becoming good people, to them finding out the truth, to them coming up and having a good upbringing, to them becoming good citizens of this country, as well as being good to them and others they live with, and ultimately for them to be able to find the path to happiness. So that comes out of Vedana, that is Sukha Vedana, because you understand that Nibbana is the only thing that can bring you ultimate happiness. And we talked about this plenty of times in the past weeks, how all this time we thought it was karma, sensuality, that brings us happiness, but ultimately, in our desire to acquire, the things that we ultimately acquired only brought us suffering. And I repeat, if you miss previous sermons, then please go and listen to them, because I will be making references to previous sermons rather than going over old ground every week. Okay? So if you miss a sermon, listen to it. And if you did listen to this sermon, then go back and listen to it again. Because when you listen to something the second time, it becomes clear, you get more detail from it. Listen to the third time, listen to the fourth time. At least, you know, before you come back then the following week, listen to this sermon at least once again. If you can't listen to it in one stretch, break it up into chunks on your way to work. You know, get it on an MP3 player, put it into your car, get it in your phone, put your earphones on. Whatever. Just listen to it at least once more. And then what didn't become obvious to you this time will become obvious to you the second time you listen to it, at least one more time. So Vedana Paccaya Tanha. So what brings rise to Vedana? Contact. This contact is mental contact. We're talking about not physical, we're not talking about two objects hitting each other. So this contact is where, when you use your eyes, let's take an example, you're looking at an object. As we've perhaps talked, I think we've talked in the past, the only thing your eyes can actually observe is color. Your eyes can't observe anything else. Whether you're colorblind, even if you're colorblind, if you're still seeing black and white, that's still color. When you see definition, you're seeing color. When you see high definition, you're still seeing color. That's all you're seeing. Just more color. That's all. So whether you call it 720, 1080 or 4K, you're still seeing color. Just more of it. So when your eyes pick up color, that color does not go and hit your mind, because color is something that, you know, it's a physical thing. It exists out there in the world. Your mind cannot pick up that. But what happens is your eyes can perceive color. It then sends a signal through your nervous system, through your ocular nerves into your brain, and then your brain passes an imprint of that to your mind. It's an imprint. That passing of the imprint is what passe is. Now, this passe or this contact happens for an arahant as well. But we are talking about a problem. We are talking about this ailment, this disease that gives rise to jati, jara, vyadi, marana. An arahant has escaped from that. So it's not just any old passe we are talking about here. We are talking about some passe. So the true technical term to be used here is sampassa. So avidya paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vinyana, vinyana paccaya nama rupa paccaya salayatana, salayatana paccaya sampassa. I mean, of course, you know, we use the word passa, but that's a common term. Arahatun Mahanses have passa as well, but we are talking about sampassa. Sampassa is the problematic passa. So again, what is sang? Yes, the coming together. So here we are talking about coming together of avidya and tanha. Where did Parisampada start from? Avidya. So we are talking about the coming together of avidya, tanha with passa. So when you see an object, we talked about the example of your eyes looking at color, looking at an object, and your eyes picking up that object, passing it to your brain then sending an impulse, an imprint onto your mind, and your mind now taking that imprint with ignorance and attachment. Now that is sampassa. When you take something with ignorance, you're not necessarily seeing what's really out there. You're seeing what you want to see, not what's really out there. Let me ask you a really simple question. If you see a pretty girl, then chances are your heart starts beating faster. When did you really last see a pretty girl? Do pretty girls exist out in the world? You're only seeing color. You're seeing hair. You're seeing eyes. You're seeing eyebrows. You're seeing lips. You're seeing noses. You're seeing a chin. You're seeing skin. If you think, wow, she's got really beautiful skin, well, let's flay her. What does that mean? Let's de-skin her. Put her skin into a bag and I'll give you the skin and say, take this home with you. You prepared to do that? When you see a bag full of skin, does your heart start pounding? That's lovely skin there, darling. But that's all you're seeing. Okay, one might say, well, she's got beautiful eyes. Well, let's unpluck her eyes. I'll pluck her eyes and give you her eyes in a bag. Beautiful eyes, would you ever say that again? No. But that's what you're looking at. You're looking at eyebrows. You're saying her beautiful lips, they're so plump. Okay, I'll chop her lips off and I'll give it to you. You prepared to take that home? You prepared to go and start kissing that at home? No. But isn't that what you're really seeing? I'm talking about what are you actually seeing with your eyes? Are you really seeing a girl with your eyes? Or are you just seeing the pieces that make a girl? So where is the girl formed? In your mind. You look at a car and you think you're looking at a car. Really? What are you looking at? You're looking at the steering wheel. You're looking at a windscreen. You're looking at a bonnet. You're looking at a wheel. Another wheel, another wheel, and another wheel. And another wheel, a spare wheel. You're looking at the doors. You're looking at the handles. You're looking at the seats. You're looking at the seat belts. When did you really look at a car? Can you really go and touch a car? I challenge you. I dare you. Go touch a car if you can. Well, you say, well, I'm touching a car. No, you're touching the door of the car. I said, touch the car. Okay, when you get back home, touch your girlfriend if you can. I didn't say touch her hand. I said, touch your girlfriend. Can you? Do you see a hole here? What do you see? You see the things that make it up. You see the bits, the parts that come together that to make that object up. But that object is not formed out there, it's formed in your mind. So how do you know a girl when you see a girl? You have this model of a girl in your mind. It's a model. Achu. It's, you know, like when you bake bread, you put the flour in the model. Is there another word for it? A cast. Yeah? And then you put it in the oven. When it comes out of it, you see a bread. So you have a model or a cast in your mind. And that model, when you project out into the outside world, anything that fits into that model, you say, that's a girl. You have a model of a car in your mind. You project that model into the outside world. Anything that fits into that model, you say, that's a car. But that car is formed in your mind, not outside. Can you touch this table? You come and touch here, and I'll say, that's not the table. That's the surface. You touch somewhere else, I'll say, that's the leg. That's not the table. I asked you to touch the table. Can you touch the table? Okay, touch yourself if you can. No, don't touch your face. I said touch yourself. You know, you all have a name. Let's say your name is Sunil. Sunil, touch yourself. You can't do that, can you? Wherever you touch, you're just touching a bit that makes you up. So where is this Sunil? Where is this person? Where is this girl? Where is this car? Where is this house? Where is this world? In the mind. See, the problem is this. Every one of us will have a pretty girl in our minds. Don't you? Don't say no. I know you're lying. Every one of us has a nice car in our mind. Every one of us has a nice house in our mind. Every one of us has a nice cake in our mind. That's the cake that you try to bake. The car that you have in your mind is the car that you go out looking for. The holiday that you have in your mind is the holiday that you go out trying to find. You speak to your holiday operators, your tour operators. Hey, can you get this holiday for me, please? And he asks you, what kind of holiday would you like? And then you try to elaborate the holiday that's in your mind. When you went to get married, you got married, when you wanted to get yourself a girlfriend, a boyfriend, whoever, you had a picture of a girlfriend in your mind. You had a picture of, you know, the perfect girl, the perfect boy, the perfect man, the perfect woman in your mind. And then you went looking for him. You went looking for her. How was this image formed? Well, all the years of bringing up, all the years of upbringing. You know, reading books on the internet. Magazines have a lot to do with it these days. You know, they give you models. How they portray this is the perfect woman. Well, much of that is photoshopped. Right? But the problem is what? You know, children don't see it that way. And they think, I've got to be like that. Well, you know, how did plastic surgery come into this world? You know, plastic surgery came into this world to treat a problem where people were deformed. But now it's treating a different kind of problem. You know, there's Botox. I know, you know, because I lived in the UK for a long period of time, you know, people there are, you know, they're completely, it's a business out there. It's an industry. How, you know, people, the ways to, for people to change the way they look. Some bits they want to make bigger, other bits they want to make smaller. Why? Because that's what models look like in the magazines. That's what the models look like on TV. They don't realize these models have been photoshopped. They don't realize that these models work 9 to 5 every day, working really hard, trying to maintain that physique. That model that you see on, you know, on your way to okay, I'll just give you an example, right? And I've got nothing against these names. I just give examples because you can relate to them. You're driving up to Odell. You see a board, there's a model on there. Do you think she ever gets to taste Chinese? Do you think she can ever go to a buffet and eat there? The things that you do to make, you know, just to find simple happiness, simple pleasures in life, do you think she can afford herself? No. Why is that? Because to be able to maintain that physique, they have to put themselves through a lot of pain. But what happens is, you know, our people, young minds, they look at these things and now their model gets updated inside. As a young child, now you've got to be quiet, okay? As a young child, the only women that you get to meet in your life is your mother, sometimes your sister, your grandmother and so forth. You know, these are the people that you live at home. Normal people. Normal people who lead normal lives. But then you open them up to the television. You open them up to the internet. They start going out. They see billboards. They see advertisements. Advertisements. And then now the models that they had in their minds, they start getting warped. They start getting distorted. Now the models that they're looking for are no longer the mother that they had at home. The mother never had time to paint her fingernails because she was far too busy at home, cooking and cleaning and doing all the house chores. But the models that they see on the TV, that they see on the internet, oh, they're perfect. So now when you go out looking for a girlfriend, when you go out looking for your potential bride, what's the model that you have? It's the model that you got. That's the model that was formed after your experience of what you found, what you got to see out there. So this is the danger. When you don't realize the truth behind what looks like the apparent truth, then you fall into this trap. And then what happens is, the demand goes up for people that, you know, clearly have to do things to change the way they look. And then what happens then is everyone wants to get into that, and then it becomes a business, it becomes an industry. And then young girls have to go and change the way they look. Young boys have to go and change the way they look just to be able to fit, because it's a survival of the fittest. That's how Mara plays this game. So you project your perfect girlfriend picture, your projection. You see the girl that fits into that, you think, oh, she's pretty. She's got to be mine. You take her home. All the things that she did to maintain that figure, now no longer has she got the time to do that. Now she's a busy housewife. Or perhaps she has to go to work. She doesn't have a 9-to-5 to go and go to the gym and do her workouts. And then before soon she becomes a mother. Now her body starts to change. But this man got married to the woman that he had a model of inside his mind. That model does not get updated. He's holding on to that model. Now he's projecting that model, but his wife no longer fits into that model. So what happens now? He's got to go looking for somebody else that fits. You see how ignorance puts you into these positions of torture, pain and suffering and problems every single time? When you don't see reality, when you just take what you see at the surface, when you don't see under the tip of the iceberg, this is what happens. And the world is responsible for this. You know, the people that want to make a living in this world, you know, this is what they do. They'll give you models, they'll throw this, that and the other. They'll say, this is the kind of food you have to eat to maintain a slim figure. By the way, I've got nothing against them, okay? You can do what you like. If you want to go through plastic surgery, go through plastic surgery all year round. That's not my problem. I've got nothing against them. You know, they're giving you a service that you want. Besides, I know before soon, they're going to come after us as well. Not to do plastic surgery on. They're going to come after us with sticks and guns and all sorts of things. Why? Because we give you the truth. When you realize the truth, then you no longer start running after these false pretenses. And then what happens to them? Then they can no longer sustain themselves. You know, when it starts hitting their livelihood, now they've got a problem. And then they start finding who's doing this to us. You know, people watch TV all day round, all year long. You know, and when we come and talk to you about the essenceless nature of using your eyes to look at sights and sounds, you know, after all you take is Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vinyan. It's all anicca dukkha anatta. What's the point of it? And then, you know, there are people who come and tell us, Swami Mahansa, I used to watch TV all day long, now I have no interest in it. So what happens when this number keeps going up? All these producers that spend millions, trillions on making TV programs and commercials, you know, you're attacking their livelihood. So even if you don't watch TV, at least keep the TV on at home. Otherwise, we're under threat. You know, I need to be alive at least until I complete what it is I need to do with my life. So just until then, just keep your TV on at home. You don't have to watch it. Just keep it on. So their ratings will still be okay. Okay? So, pasta, I was saying, was contact. So that contact is when you see something with your eyes, it leaves an imprint on your mind. And that imprint, what your mind does at that point, is it has this image that it has a model of. And now it checks, is this in line with the model that I have? Does this fit with the model that I have? If it fits, that's where Sukha Vedana comes from. If it doesn't fit, that's where Dukkha Vedana comes from. If it still can't figure it out, that's where Upeksha Vedana comes from. Making sense? Good. Now, where does pasa come from? What's the cause for that? Salayatana. Salayatana paccha pasa. So what's salayatana? So that's what I used to think. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and physical sensation. Does an Arahatun Mahansa not have eyes, ears, and nose, and tongue, and all that, all the five senses? Of course he does. When someone becomes an Arahant, does someone come along and extract their eyes and cut their tongue off and cut their ears off? No. They still have all their five senses intact, perfectly fine and in full working order. So there's a difference between Indriya and Ayatana. So your Indriya are your faculties. Your Ayatana is what we are talking about here. Now I'm going to have to use a translation here because otherwise it's not fair on our listeners. What is an ayatane? Ayatane? It's an institute. What do you do at an ayatane? What do you do at an institute? You produce something. It's either a product or a service, right? Generally a service. So the reason that Tathagata Mahansa speaks about the Salayatana, because it's six, okay, so Sala is six there, Asa, Kana, Diva, Nasa, Kaya, Mana, or eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, body and the mind. So these are the six Ayatanas, the six institutes. So why does he call them the institutes? Because they produce a service. They're not just Indriya, they're not just faculties, they're institutes. Producing a service. Remember, this being has avidya tanha. We're talking about a being with ignorance and attachment. For as long as ignorance and attachment are with you, do you remember baby Natasha? Did you all listen to that sermon? If you didn't, then please go back and listen to it. Remember baby Natasha's mother got her husband, baby Natasha's father, to go shopping. To buy things for baby Natasha. Clothes and toys and food. And we all know baby Natasha was just a figment of her mother's imagination, right? If you're scratching your head, then you haven't listened to the sermon. So please go back and listen to it. It's titled Baby Natasha. So for as long as the mother thought, for as long as the mother was under this delusion that this, I have a baby, she's alive and kicking, she needs to be fed, she needs to be clothed, she needs to be entertained. For as long as there was that requirement to do that, the father was sent out shopping. The father had to go buy clothes, buy food, buy toys, wash the baby, right? All these things the father had to do. When the mother's disease, this insanity was cured, when she was no longer a mad person and she understood, actually this baby is not, it does not really exist, it's just a figment of my imagination. When she understood that, she no longer sent her father, she no longer sent her husband out shopping. Now that's the difference between an indriya and an ayatane. Your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, your body, your mind, they're there for you to survive. You're alive, so you must survive. You didn't get your eyes to go watching TV. What you got your eyes for was to keep your body safe, so you could see where you were going, so you wouldn't tread on something you shouldn't be treading on. You didn't get a pair of ears to go listen to rock music. You got a pair of ears to protect yourself. That's what you got a pair of ears for. Your sense of taste was not to go finding delicacies and cuisines and trying to, you know, please your tongue. The reason you have a tongue is to avoid you from taking in poisons and things that might potentially be harmful for you. Your body, your physical sensation is to protect you from the elements, from wind, from the cold, from heat. It's to protect you. But what do people do with these senses today? What do we do with our eyes? We go pleasing our mind. I mean, the eyes don't want to see sights, do they? Remember I gave you the example of this light up here? This bulb up here, it's got a fixed lifespan. It can be lit for, let's say, 1,000 hours. At the end of the 1,000 hours, it's going to burn out. So if this light were able to speak, and you asked it, would you rather me keep you on or keep you off? What do you think it's going to say? Keep me off. Why? Because the more you keep it off, the longer its lifespan, the longer it can be alive. So if your eyes could speak, and you asked your eyes, do you want me to use you or do you want me to keep you unused? What do you think your eyes are going to say? Just keep me unused. I'm perfectly fine that way. You open me up, you go take me and sit in front of the TV, and now I have to keep staring at them. I have to keep blinking to wet my eyes every few moments. Sometimes you keep me open. I mean, you know, when you go home, write an essay, my eyes speak. What do you think your eyes will probably say to you in a given day? Think about all the things that you used your eyes for. If your eyes were able to speak, what do you think your eyes would say? When you were sat in front of that TV with your eyes open, staring at it, or when you were playing that computer game, staring at the computer screen, sometimes your eyes watering, going red. Your mother's come and say, Puta, nidagan, you've been staring at that TV for 3 hours now. That's not good for you. Who asked you to go and sit in front of the TV? Did your eyes ask you to do that? No. Your mind asked you to do that. You know, some people, I know, sometimes it's, you know, trivialist. You know how they play music inside them. Sometimes they play music so loud, you can hear it miles away. You know, where we live, our monastery is in Ingria. So when a three-wheeler comes along and you can hear it at the monastery, I call, oh, there's Ingria sounds going around. That's what they do. You know, I mean, think if the sound that's coming from those speakers can rattle windows, what do you think it's doing to his eardrums? If it's rattling the vehicle that I'm in, what do you think it's doing to my eardrums? So, do you think your ears would rather that? No, your ears would rather you not use your ears at all. But your mind doesn't want to let them be. It uses them. It not necessarily uses them, it abuses them. That's the word. Your mind abuses your eyes, your mind abuses your ears, your mind abuses your tongue, your mind abuses your nose. I'll give you a really simple example, and I'm sure you can all relate to this. When someone says, can you smell that? It smells really putrid. What's putrid? It smells bad. Someone's probably farted. What do? You go, let me see. Do you not want to know what that smells like? When you do it, do you want to know what that smells like? Aren't you abusing your nose? Would your nose rather smell it or rather not smell it? Let's be honest. Rather not smell it. But your mind wants to know. When you're walking past something that, you know, say something's going rotten, and someone says, oh my God, don't go anywhere near that. Or someone says, this sock, my God, it smells bad. What do you want to do? Let me see. Let me have a sniff at it. Just one. And you go, goodness, yes, that is bad. Well, why did you go sniff it in the first place? You were warned, and yet you wanted to go sniff it. So aren't you abusing your nose? Who's responsible for this abuse? Your mind is responsible for this abuse. So your mind is abusing your five senses. Just like that mother was abusing that baby Natasha's father. For as long as baby Natasha was someone that was alive for the mother. Again, if you're looking blank, go back and listen to that sermon. I think that was a really useful sermon for you to understand who this thing that we call self is. Mama, who is this mama? Who is this self? So we abuse our senses. And that's where our indriya becomes ayatana. When the mind instructs the five senses, go looking for this. I have a model of a girl. I want you to go find that model for me. I want you to go find the girl that fits my model. Now the eyes have to go looking. It can't just take any old sights that it can take. Because, you know, if you open your eyes, your eyes are taken in sights. Perfectly fine. But your mind's not happy with any old sights. Your mind's not happy with any old sounds. Your mind's not happy with any old tastes. Your mind has particular tastes and sounds and smells and tastes that it wants you to go after. So it abuses your five senses. The moment your senses are abused, now it's providing a service. Who for? The mind. And what did we call something that provides a service? An institution. Now you see why it's not your faculties that we are talking about here, but the institutes, the salayatana. So there we go, that's how your institutes are born. The salayatana are born. So what gives rise to the salayatana? Namarupa. Namarupa paccaya salayatana. How are we doing for time? 5:30. What time do you start? 3, 4, 5. Okay. Do you want me to continue? Okay. Namarupa paccaya salayatana. So what is this Namarupa? These Namarupa are the models that we have in us. Namarupa. Nama is namaganna. To shape. I'm talking about the verb here, not the noun. To shape something. It's like when you have someone that works with glass. Right? How does a glass worker work? You know, what do you call them? Someone who works with glass? Anyway, it doesn't matter. You know, when they blow hot air, and they try to, they want to make shapes out of glassware, or a potter, right? And they work with pottery. So they take clay and then they start shaping them. So what are they doing? They give shape to the clay that they have in their hands. So to whatever material that you have with you, you want to give it certain shape. So the mind does exactly the same thing. Remember, the mind is the greatest wizard there is. It's a magician. Your mind can perform tricks. It uses rupa and then shapes it up into different ways. It comes up with these different shapes, and now it has these models, it creates these models. I think one of these sermons that we delivered, we called it Ferrari in a Pentagon. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. And there we describe how, in detail, how the mind does this. A Ferrari in a Pentagon. How the mind uses rupa and shapes these rupa into the forms that it likes. So although today we use the simple translation name and form, name doesn't necessarily cut it. I mean, what does that mean to you, name and form? What does that mean to you? So, I mean, so sometimes people say, you know, name is the name you give to someone and the form is what they look like. Well, didn't Venerable Sariputta have a name and a form? So he is an arahant. When the Buddha saw Venerable Sariputta, he said, Sariputta, come here. I mean, he still used a name. He looked at a form and he said, he gave a name. But does the Buddha have avidya? Does the Buddha have ignorance? So where did name form come from? I'm not saying any of this is wrong, by the way. I'm not here to challenge what has been accepted as the norm. You know, put that to us, leave that, you know, accept that, okay, if you want, go and study that, that's perfectly fine. All I want to offer you is something else for you to think about, because you're all intelligent people. I want you to think. I'm not necessarily giving you answers, I'm getting you to think, that's all I'm doing. So what the mind does, it takes these rupas and it puts shape into them, just like a potter shapes those pots and pans with the clay that it has. So remember how this model of a girl that you have in your mind, how was this model formed? You read magazines, you saw pictures of girls on the internet, you saw actresses on TV, when you saw bits, various bits and pieces. You know, beautiful eyes of who? Aishwarya Rai. You saw the arms of the girl that's on the Lux advert. You saw the hair of the girl that's on the what? Rexona advert. Right? So you take all these bits and pieces and they're all saved in your memory banks. What your mind can do now is take all those rupas and then shape it up into the model that it wants, the model that it likes. And as soon as it does that, now it has a model. And that model is what it gets your senses to go and find. The mind creates what it wants to find. So the mind sees what it wants to see, not necessarily what's out there. Again, as I say, go back and listen to that other seminar. Otherwise, I'll have to spend a lot of time trying to explain to you how all of that works. So what gives rise to Nama Rupa? Vijnana. Vijnana Pachya Nama Rupa. So Vijnana is again today taken as consciousness. But again, you know, even an Arahatun Vahanse has consciousness. As long as an Arahatun Vahanse is alive, he has consciousness. So it's not sufficient for us to say it's consciousness. Remember, we are talking about something that started with avidya. We are talking about something that started with ignorance. So we are talking about Vijnana that comes from ignorance, whose root is in ignorance. When the root of this consciousness is in ignorance, it's a magician, it's a wizard. Just like a wizard can do all sorts of wizardry in front of you. Create all sorts of things. He'll bring a hat out of which he'll show you the hat's empty. But the next moment put his arm in the hat and takes out a rabbit. And you're going, where did that come from? The mind's like that. Vijnana is like that. Have you heard Tathagata Vahanse says, Vijnane Mayakarik? Your Vijnana is a magician? What does a magician do? It does magic. It is magic. Magic is showing you something that does not really exist. It's foolery. It's tricking you. So what your mind does when it performs this trickery of Vijnana, is it goes into the rupa. So remember, we're talking about vijnana paccaya nama rupa, right? Not nama rupa paccaya vijnana. There is that as well, but that we'll talk about another day. This goes anyamanya as well. What's anyamanya? No, not that anyamanya. There's anyamanya pratyaya, which is complementary. Goes both ways. Vijnana paccaya nama rupa, nama rupa paccaya vijnana. That we'll talk about another day, because otherwise all of this is going to get confusing. Right? So, we have the vijnana, which is the wizard, which is the magician, who's now going into the banks of rupa. Rupa rupa, shabda rupa, gandha rupa, rasa rupa, poddapa rupa, and dhamma rupa. All the sights you saw, stored in your memory banks, all the sounds, all the smells, the tastes, right? The physical sensations and the thoughts that you had, all stored in your memory banks. It picks all these things up. And then what it does, it creates that model. So vijnana creates the model. So here comes a magician who creates a model out of things you thought that could never work out. You see, if I asked you, would you like to go on holiday right now? Or would you like to go to the beach? You'll probably think of, oh yes, I'd love to go to the beach. And you'll say, in fact, you know, I'll give you all a piece of paper and I say, draw a beach that you'd like to go to. And you'll probably draw the sandy beach that you saw in Hambantota. And there'll be palm trees that you saw in Colombo Beach. There'll be the water that you saw in Trinco. You'll draw turtles that you saw in Gaul. All these bits that were, you know, these are the upadana rupas. The aggregates that you're clinging onto. We'll talk about that another day. But you know, all these things that are stored in your memory banks. The rupas, the shabdas, the gandhas, the rasas, the sparshas. Sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and the physical sensations as well as the things that you imagine in your own mind. Right? So all these things that you have saved in your memory banks, you now use to draw that picture and you say, here's a beach that I'd like to go to. Where on earth can I find that beach? That cannot be found anywhere. Why? Because it's the sandy beach from Colombo, it's the trees from Gaul, it's the turtles from Trinco. That beach does not exist on this planet. But it exists in your mind. So that's the beach that you're looking for, just as much as the girl that you're looking for only really exists. Where? In your mind. The perfect wife that you're looking for only exists where? In your mind. The perfect son that you looked for, that you wanted, only exists where? In your mind. Is your son the perfect son? When he's mischievous? Has he never made you angry? Was that your perfect son? Have you never cried or never been angry because of your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your husband or your wife? If so, is that your perfect girlfriend? Is that the perfect wife? Is that the perfect husband? No, but the girl in your mind, does she ever make you angry? Does she ever make you cry? Does the child in your mind ever make you angry? No. So what happens is when the person outside does not behave to what you have inside, the expectation that you have inside, what happens then? Conflict. That's where the conflict comes from. There's a girl in your mind, she speaks soft. She speaks in a soft voice. She only speaks lovely words. She smells so nice. One day she comes along, she doesn't speak to you in nice words. She doesn't smell nice. Now what happens? Now you're in conflict. Why? Because you have a girl in your mind and that model does not fit with the girl that's outside right now. Ladies and gentlemen, where do you think the problem is? Outside or with you? With you, indeed. We all have these models. For everything that we live with, we create models. That's our vijnana. That's the magician that we have, this mind that is a magician, this vijnana. It creates these models for all these things that we associate with. And then when we go looking in this world, things that fit within to our models. Sometimes they fit 20%, 30%, 40% and we are happy to take it home. But before long, they change. Why? Causes change, results change. Cause and effect. Hetu venas veno, phala venas veno. She ages. She decays. She doesn't speak in soft words anymore. She is no longer interested in you. She is interested in the other guy, your best friend. Don't these things happen? Think about your own lives. Your lives are the lab, remember? That's where this Dhamma can be real for you. That's how it's going to be real. So, Vijnana Paccaya Namarupa, that's how Vijnana does this job of creating these Namarupas. So what causes Vijnana? Sankara. Again, what is Sang? Coming together of ignorance and attachment. Sankara. What is Kara? It's the activity. It's doing something. So there is Vachi Sankara, Mano Sankara, Kaya Sankara. Chetana ham bhikkave kamhang vadami. Tathagatan Mahasaya says. It's intention that is, or volition, is what gives rise to kamma. This Sankara is what he meant by Chetana. It's the creation of your mind. The creation of that thought. So, for example, when someone comes to you and says, why don't you buy that car? I think, that's the car you deserve. They gave you a Dhamma. They gave you something to think about. So that's a Dhamma. For as long as you have ignorance within you, you can be fooled. This is the nature. For as long as you have, you're flammable. For as long as you have ignorance with you, you're flammable. All it takes is someone to bring fire to you and you're ablaze. This is why what we need to do is not put out all the fires outside, but make ourselves non-flammable. That's what we need to do. Think about that. Let's not try to put out all the fires in the world. We can never do that. The Buddha didn't try to do that. Well, I don't think we are going to have any luck doing that if he didn't. What we need to do is make ourselves non-flammable. If we are dosed in a liter of kerosene, then the moment someone brings a matchstick, that's enough to set us on fire. So what we need to do is wash all that away. Raga, dvesha, moha, we need to wash all that away. And then, no matter how much fire is brought to us, then we can't be set ablaze. That's what we need to do. So, Sankara Paccaya Vijnana. So, when someone said, hey, look at that car, I think that's the car that you deserve to buy, that was a Dhamma that was put to someone that has ignorance within them. They couldn't see, because of ignorance, that this attachment that I have towards this is finally going to bring me what? Suffering. Because you couldn't see that, because you didn't see that desire is what is responsible for suffering, and you thought desire is what brings me happiness. Remember last week we discussed this, how we think desire is what brings us happiness, not suffering. Because we think desire brings us happiness, you went and attached yourself to that. And the moment you attach yourself to that, now you start planting seeds of vijnana. It's like a tree that starts branching. Your sankara is like that. So now you start thinking about, hey, how can I get that? How can I get that car? How can I buy that car? But you don't stop at thinking. You start saying things. You go start speaking to your wife. Hey, darling, don't you think it's time we upgraded? You know that car you said you always wanted? I think I know which car we need to buy now. And you don't stop at that. You go and do kaya karma. So it's not just mano karma. It's vachi karma and kaya karma. All these things are sankara. And as this sankara tree grows, it grows to become a tree that's vijnana. That's how sankara becomes vijnana. The tree, that seed that you planted, which was a sankara, starts to grow. First it's just a seedling. Then it starts to grow. You keep watering it. The asat purushas that you associate, the immoral people, they come and keep watering it. They come and keep adding fertilizer. Every week he comes and asks you, hey, you know that car we talked about? Yeah, I'm saving up for it. But when you come to these sermons, we talk about anicca dukkha anatta. how desire brings you suffering. But the moment you walk outside and you go to and live your lives again, what do people come and tell you? Desire brings you suffering? Is that what people tell you? No, they say desire brings you happiness. Go acquire, go build, go attach yourself. That's what people say. So what they're doing is they're watering your seed of sankara. Every time they bring in a new dhamma, your tree keeps growing. And finally, until it becomes a vinyan. Now it's a very strong, forceful, impactful volition. Now you want to do it, now you are prepared to do it. And then you have vinyana. Now that vinyana goes and creates the model, the nama-rupa, and then the model, according to the model, you now get your faculties to go and start fishing, to provide you a service, right? Get the rupas, rupa-shabda-gandha-rasa-sparsha, according to that model. And then when they come, salayatana-paccaya-sparsa, then you come into contact with your mind, passa-paccaya-vedana. Now you either get sukha-vedana, dukha-vedana, or peksha-vedana. And where you have sukha-vedana, you go and attach yourself to it. Tanha. Tanha-paccaya-upadana. Now you have close association with it. And then you have bhava. And then you have jati. So finally, where someone said, hey, why don't you buy that car? That was the first dhamma that came into someone that has ignorance. Because you could be fooled. Because you could be fooled, when someone gives you that dhamma, every time that dhamma comes along, a paticca-samuppada process kicks into action. That jati is ultimately you going and buying the car. All the things that happen between that person planting that seed in your mind, you know, that's that expression, right? There's an idiom for that. Planting a seed, that's the seed of sankara. That's the seed of, you know, that's the seed that can be planted because you have a field that is capable of germinating. You know, if you have just a dry land, if it's bare land, no matter how much you plant seeds, they're not going to grow. But if you have rich land that's rich in fertilizer and water, then all it takes is one seed to be planted. That's all that's required. Before soon, there's going to be a forest. Why? Because one tree is going to give rise to another tree, and then another tree, and another tree, and that's how our vinyana goes. You know how sometimes you go online, right? I think a lot of you, especially our young children here, can relate to this. Just in a flash of a second, you see something flash in front of you. Sometimes they can be adverts, sometimes they can be pop-ups. You know, sometimes it's a picture of a half-naked woman. They come up just as pop-ups, and quickly you close it. But now the seed has been planted. Because you have ignorance within you, that seed has now been planted. The seed starts growing. Because your mind is capable of going into the state of vinyana, now it goes into your memory banks. It picks up all the sights, all the sounds, all the smells, all the tastes, all the physical sensations that you took. It starts bringing all them back to the present moment from the past. Now it creates a model. And as soon as that model has been created, now what does it do? It gets you to go shopping. Now it was just one flash of a second, half-naked woman, just one pop-up. You thought nothing of it. But a moment later, a few minutes later, well, you know what's going on. Now you're lost in the deep, dark web. Isn't this why you need to delete your history after you've finished your browsing sessions? So your parents don't know what you've been up to? Think. I mean, I've got to tell you about your own lives. This is what our ignorance does to you. But if you are an arahata mahanse, at least if you are an anagami person, does it matter how many pop-ups come in front of you? Even if a real woman came up and stood naked in front of you, you'd be like, so what? What's the difference between you and this cup that's in front of me? You're a rupa, that's a rupa. What's the difference? But for as long as there's ignorance within us,
We have that field that is wet, that is ripe. All that is required is for a seed to be planted. And as soon as that seed is planted, that's the end. So this is why you need to protect your children, you need to protect yourselves from asatpurushayo, from the immoral people. Because what they do is they come and they keep throwing seeds at you. That's what they do. They know that you have rich land on which you can cultivate. And they keep throwing these seeds. This is why you need to protect yourselves from asatpurusha sevane. From bad people, from bad friends. You know, if you know some of your friends are bad, then please keep away from them. Today you think, oh, it's just a bit of fun. Fast forward a few months, fast forward a few years, you're a completely corrupt person. Think about things that have happened to your friends and how bad association got them into trouble. I think you all know what I'm talking about. Because I'm talking about your lives. Don't you all know someone that fell into bad association and then destroyed their lives as a result of that? This is why you've got to keep yourselves away from bad people, bad association. So, hopefully that gives you at least an overview of how dependent origination is responsible for ultimately jati, jara, marana, shoka, parideva, dukkha, domanasa. Like I said, that's a very high level overview. The further you walk into this ocean, the deeper it's going to get. We don't need to go that far to bathe. Let's bathe at the shore. Anyway, let's use a bucket. That's perfectly fine. We don't need to go that far into the ocean. And then at least we are walking in safe water. And then at least there are lifeguards who can catch us when something's going wrong. What color do lifeguards wear? Orange? Yellow. What color is this lifeguard wearing? Exactly. This is why stay in the vicinity of the lifeguards so they can help you. Don't go treading in waters that you don't know. Because when you get lost, you know, sometimes lifeguards haven't traveled that far either because they're here to just get washed and, you know, they're here to do their job. My job on this planet is to get out of this place as soon as possible. So I can tell you what I know within the remit of what I know. If the Buddha went into the forest and picked up a handful of leaves and said, Ananda, look at this forest. Are the leaves that are in my hand more, or is it all the leaves that are in this forest? And Venerable Ananda says, Venerable Sir, how can you even ask me to compare the two? And then he says, Ananda, what I have taught you is just this. What I have preached to you all in this world is what's in my hand. What I know is all the leaves in this forest. So there's plenty of stuff that I don't know and I don't have an interest in knowing either. Because there are 4 tsunamis coming my way. I have bigger fish to fry. Don't you all? Does the karma play a role in the influence we get by the Mara, or is it the same kind of influence for all by Mara? It's a question that came up. So I think this, if I understand this question correctly, it's, does the karma that we have done have any bearing on the influence that Mara can have on us? Or regardless of the karma that we have done, does the Mara have the same kind of influence? So yes, it has an influence. It's because of the good karmas that you've done, today you have the opportunity to come and listen to these sermons. While you're here, Mara, there's little that Mara can do. Because every moment that you spend here, what are we doing? We're shedding away ignorance. And we are lighting the flames of Vidya. Wisdom. Right? We're lighting the flames of wisdom. And with the flame of wisdom you go burning desire, aversion and delusion. So it's because of the good karmas you've done. This is why I said before, Ma bhikkave punyanam bhaita sukasetang adivacanam punyanti. Monks, fear not the meritorious deeds. Go and do as much meritorious deeds as you possibly can. So you should all do the same, because with every meritorious deed you do, you are doing thing, merit, you are acquiring merit. And that merit is going to help create the environment that you absolutely require to understand the Dhamma. If you haven't been born as a Trihetuka Patisandhilabhi, which is with Aloba, Adosa, Amoha, if your Patisandhichitta does not have Aloba, Adosa, Amoha, there is no way you are going to be able to understand this Dhamma. To be born with as a Trihetuka Patisandhilabhi is the result of good karmas you've done in the past. The thing is, there was only one person that could look at you and say whether you were Duhetuka or a Trihetuka. He's passed away 2650 years ago. So we don't have the opportunity to go and ask him now. So what we need to do is, if we can't tell for ourselves whether we are a Duhetuka or a Trihetuka, whether we are bi-rooted or tri-rooted, what we need to do is act like we are capable. Do all the things that we need to do in the hope that we can get to where we want to go. Because aim for the stars, ladies and gentlemen. Aim for the stars. You might end somewhere halfway, but that's okay. Aim for the stars. The stars are the Arahat nuances and the Arahat Mehini nuances. Aim for that. If you aim for much lower than that, then you'll again end again halfway there, potentially. But if you aim for the stars, then one day you're going to reach there. So that's what we need to do. Mara can influence us, there's no question about that. But I think last week, as well I said, let's not worry about Mara Divyaputra, because there are three Maras that are with us all day long, 24/7, 365 days a year. Raga, Dvesha, Moha. These are the Klesa Mara, the cankers, the defilements. So we have, again, bigger fish to fry, so let's not worry about the other things in life. Okay. So I think we'll conclude the sermon there. You have a question? Say again?
To aim at?
Okay, why did they say that? No, why did they say that? Okay, you're going to have to find out why they say that. He says in their school they say to aim for the stars, aim for a coconut tree. Oh, I see what you mean. I got it. Especially if you are stood under the coconut tree, then yes. Okay. As I said, we've brought some books along, so please leave one aside, because I'd like to gift it to the Venerable Monk here, to the Venerable Reverend. But others, then please feel free to help yourselves. If there's a family, then perhaps just take one book so others have an opportunity to take one as well. So this is about karma vipaka, deeds and results. Read them and see what you can learn from them. And share it with others. Once you've read, finish reading, pass it on. It's a gift of Dhamma for free distribution only. So make use of that. And as I said, if you are interested in helping us transcribing these sermons, then please let us know. It's a very meritorious deed, because it's an opportunity to help other people. Let me ask you this question. If you are certain that this Dhamma helps you attain Nibbana, and your parents are deaf, would you not take the trouble to transcribe, write it down, and then pass it on? Can you tell me which one of these people have not been a mother or father to you in your journey in sansara? Is there anyone here? No. We've all been mothers and fathers to each other. Plenty of times. So are we only interested about our mother in this birth? What about the mother in the past birth? Who sacrificed herself, and thanks to that, today I'm born a human being. I went to do something bad. She got in the way and said, "Puta, let me." She went and committed an unmeritorious deed. Today she's in the hell. And she, because she stopped me from doing that, I'm born as a human. So isn't everyone that's alive today, someone that was your mother or a father? So if you have the opportunity to give them the Dhamma, you know, is preaching the Dhamma difficult, or you know, what's difficult? Writing it down or preaching it? So you have the easy bit to do, I think. So if you have some time, again, this is by no means a must. If you have some time, then you know, please let the sponsor, the organizers know, and they'll give you the instructions. But it's a hugely meritorious deed, and we'll be able to produce published books in future with the label of your efforts. Okay. Also, I think there was an RMIT3 printout that we brought along. Have you shared that with everyone? It's in English, yes. Yeah. So if you can pass that around. So this is the RMIT3 meditation that we do at the end of every sermon, and we usually do it in Sinhala, but there were quite a few of you who asked for the English translation, so we've brought printouts in English. It has the meaning of what it is that we chant when we do the RMIT3 meditation. I'm not necessarily going to chant in English, because I'm not sure that will work exactly. But if you, at home, if you, you know, I would encourage you all to take some time to read it, reflect on it, at least once a day. Okay? So there's a singular one as well. If you want a singular one, then shall we leave it at the... Actually, no, because we are going to... Sorry, can I have a look at that? Okay. So let us conclude this sermon then. Let us all again take a moment to reflect on the fact that it is the Lord Buddha's Dhamma that we have the privilege and the opportunity to listen to understand, and to help us unshackle ourselves from this endless suffering of samsara. Let us also take a moment to transfer the merits of this meritorious deed. All the merits that we have all acquired today, to all the spirits, the demons, the dead that we invited at the beginning of this sermon, as well as all our distant and past relations, all our ancestors who might have helped us in any way, shape or form, be that by offering us a glass of water or perhaps showing us the way when we might have been lost. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, and may these merits help them all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also, it is because of the Bhikkhu Bhikkhuni Upasaka Upasikas that we have the opportunity today to listen to the Dhamma, to practice the Dhamma, to preach the Dhamma. It is because they sacrificed their lives for the preservation of the Lord Buddha's Dhamma that was preached 2,650 years ago. And therefore may they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have acquired today, and may they all achieve the noble bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also may the chief incumbent monk of this temple, the most venerable Udve Dhammaloka Nayaka Swami Mahanse, as well as all the other
incumbent monks of this temple, as well as all the other bhikkhu bhikkhunis, upasaka upasikas who live, who reside throughout this world, who dedicate their lives to practicing the Dhamma, to disseminating the Dhamma, to helping us all liberate ourselves from the shackles of samsara. May they all be able to rejoice in the merits that we have acquired today, and may those merits help them all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this very birth itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May everyone, excuse me, may everyone that helped make this event a success, helped organize this sermon by arranging the furniture, by sending out invitations, by making the facilities available to, or perhaps even by offering you a glass of water, or perhaps by making the technology available today for your listening ease. So anyone that helped us, anyone who might have given you transport to come and join these sermons, or all and everyone that helped you attend this sermon, may all those people rejoice in the merits that we have acquired today. May all our parents and our brothers, our sisters, our teachers, uncles, aunts, any relations of ours who would have helped us throughout our life in this birth, may all of them rejoice in these merits, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this very birth itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, we all live in a land that was blessed by the Lord Buddha. We all live in a land that was blessed by the most venerable Sariputta and the most venerable Moggallana. And in their time, this land was full of Arihatan Vahanses and Arihat Mahinin Vahanses. May the merits that we have all acquired today help us all to attain that state, and may this land be once again be blessed with many Arihatan Vahanses and many Arihat Mahinin Vahanses. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may all the merits that we have all acquired today in preaching this sermon as well as in listening to this sermon help us all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in the era of the Gautama Samma Sambuddha Dhananuhansa itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.